kwata ingongotitha mwene. Aanangeshefa ya Namibia, ompito ombwanawa olonjika. Tseitha nina omayakulo niilandithomwa yoye, yongeshefa yoye okupitila mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoye tuende tuimemeha uuka kombaanga nena. Kara omukwashipaleki wimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera Selma, konora hetatu imwe. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha kutekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Chikao shafathana na alongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotitha mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia, ompito ombwanawa olonjika. Tseitha nina omayakulo niilandithomwa yoye, yongeshefa yoye okupitila mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoye tuende tuimemeha uuka kombaanga nena. Kara omukwashipaleki wimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera Selma, konora hetatu imwe. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon, dear listeners, good afternoon. And ultimately welcoming you to this particular session of The Home Run here on your number one talk radio station. We do have a short but very insightful discussion also lined up. He's actually just stepped in right now, but as we're obviously also waiting for Helmut to, you know, also grace us with his presence. He's just quickly caught up somewhere, but nonetheless, don't worry, guys. And ultimately, getting into the discussions that we've obviously got lined up for you, if you've seen our post on social media, primarily we'll be looking at the state visit by President Nandan Daitwa that basically ended on Sunday-ish timelines and all that alike. But before we come back, or before we continue, we'll quickly come back after this, dear listeners. We'll be back right after this.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tito ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihoetike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tito ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihoetike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
And coming back, dear listeners, to today's session of The Home Run. And as mentioned, we do have a guest just for the short period since we've done the revamp of The Home Run, where we'll be 3 hours, from 4 to 7.
But just for this first sort of like 30 minutes, technically we adjust the 30 minutes. It's now from now up until at least 22. But in studio, we've got a guest, Mr. Forrest Branch from the company known as Colagri. Mr. Branch, thank you for joining us and welcome to today's session of The Home Run.
Thank you for having me.
Obviously, Helmut, thank you also. You know, the people only heard me, but you also have to say something to, you know, just to declare that you're here.
I am here.
Okay. Okay. That's good. That's good. All right.
I can vouch for him. Right.
Thank you.
He's actually here.
Yeah.
And for for our social media audience, obviously, we've got the cameras and where you guys can see where we are. And ultimately, if you don't know where to follow us on, that's on Eagle FM on our particular channels. However, our discussion obviously takes a little bit of we're doing a little bit of a post analysis of President Nandin Daitwa's visit recently to China. Mr. Branch, that's ultimately why you're also joining us here, just for this 20 minutes, 14, 30 minutes-ish. But if we look at this particular outreach of Namibia in terms of this high-level state visit, with the overemphasis in industrialization, manufacturing, and these other particular, you know, but developments around economic development for Namibia, which was the president's main particular mantra throughout. Everywhere she stopped, she had these particular talking points. On the other side, the reception by the Chinese were good. Chinese business community and all that. They loved the particular messaging and that they were willing, basically, to encourage this kind of discussion, high-level discussion between Namibia and China. The first question that anyone wants to know is, do we see in the next 2 years specifically sort of like good tidings in terms of not just the investment, but this particular South to South, because this was now part of the new global South trade, China and Russia aiming to help countries like like Namibia and South Africa, no, not South Africa, but predominantly global South countries. Do we see in the next 2 years, primarily, a ramp up of global South to South industrial development from China, specifically in Namibia's context?
Well, Namibia has existing trade agreements, for example, with the European Union. They have trade agreements, I think, most favored nation status, trading status with the United States, perhaps other parts of North America. And then they have the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, which was introduced in the Clinton administration and has been extended even once by the current administration in the White House today. So, you know, it makes sense that the government would extend trade agreements and deepen and make those trade agreements meaningful and bring fulfillment within those trade agreements. So it makes sense that our president would lead a delegation to China. China is a big market for many things. If you bring it down to agriculture, China is one of the biggest markets in the world for poultry. It's one of it's a rapidly growing market for beef exports, lamb exports,
Which we are now also featuring in.
There you go. And yeah. I think even some of the new investments, Savannah Beef Processors, I think they have their eye on China. There is another abattoir coming up, I think, just about maybe 100 kilometers south of Windhoek. They have their eye on China. And so I think it makes perfect sense. I think one of the takeaways for me was the agreement to address the sanitary and phytosanitary PSP protocols for the export of grapes from Austincourt. And I think for Namibians, you may feel that you're far away from a Chinese trade agreement involving grape exports, but there's a complete value chain. I won't get into it now, but I think we have to look at the entire value chain, the entire deck of cards. When we look at one particular commodity, there's an entire ecosystem around fresh produce which exists, which Namibians can exploit, and those links to the value chain have to be in place before a single grape leaves this country. We can talk about that. Shortly.
It's actually a good point that you highlighted there about the value chain dimension, because I watched a little bit it's not a documentary per se, but it's these guys that have their own YouTube channels, and the one guy explained this how important something like warehouses. Okay, no, sorry. It's actually yesterday's discussion. I was mixing it up with another discussion. The one colleague we had here from another show, Francisco, he highlighted primarily that warehouses play a key role in value chains specifically. And specifically that Namibia has an opportunity for warehouses and erecting them all across the country. Probably that would also play a good role, a key factor for agriculture, because agriculture knows distances, work against the fresh produce, storage and all that. If we highlight into some of the particular talking points ultimately that came about, because the president noted in her own scenario that there will be foundational sectors that will try to help with this industrialization aims that she went and shared with the business community from China and so forth, is a scenario of that sectors like agriculture and mining and tourism have to play a larger role in terms of just being the bedrock, which in many natural cases, the, you know, the, what do they call those things?
Commanding heights of the economy.
Basically, yeah. But they form as that foundation.
Main industry, yeah.
So obviously this means that these roles, these sectors have to play bigger roles, like agriculture, for example. How would we then see agriculture? I'll leave mining alone because mining does its own thing. But agriculture that has this particular sort of like burden to carry into the industrialization scope of things, because it's also part of the NDP6. How will we then see them try to bridge that gap?
Look, 90% of the opportunity within the ecosystem is not agriculture, it's agribusiness.
Yeah.
So agriculture, you know, many young people think of agriculture as putting a mahongo seed in the ground, putting a maize seed in the ground.
Having the cattle, having the goat.
Yeah, the livestock, which is a different sector. But if we just talk about the history of agriculture and its link to industry. Mm-hmm. So let's just go back to the United States. Why did the United States build the railway system from California all the way to New York? You're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of close to 4,000 kilometers plus.
Mm-hmm.
So why was that? Agriculture is the foundation for industrialization and manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of a tractor, a single tractor, if you think of the plow, the disc harrow, the spike, the drag, the ripper, many of those implements involve manufacturing. But the idea came from the farmer because the farmer was trying to make his life simpler.
Mm.
But back to industrialization, the pressure to launch the railway came from the need to take fresh produce from places like Salinas, California, or Needles, California, or Yuma, Arizona, all the way to New York City, to the big capital markets.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't do that with horse and buggy.
Yeah, it would have taken too long.
Right, so you needed a railway. So for the railway, part of the railway, one of the biggest value chains in the railway is steel, because you need steel tracks, and then you need a combustion engine, and then you need all of these thousands of components that go into a train or into a train of cars, you know, up to 100 or 200 cars. So the beauty of agriculture is that it puts pressure on manufacturing and industrialization.
Mm.
So we had the horse, we had the ox, we had the horse, we had the mule, then we had the tractor. So that combustion engine was mainly, it was used for traction in agriculture.
Mm.
Then we had the truck, what we call pickups, you call buckies.
Mm.
Then we have the cars, then we have the lorries. And why were those items, why were those products invented?
Yeah.
Why were they invented? The rationale behind them was to move agriculture. Why? Because the shelf life of lettuce, the shelf life of many different types of fruits is very short. And so you needed speed. You needed a train that could run 24 hours a day. You also mentioned warehousing.
Yeah.
So if you think of the ecosystem for agribusiness, the farmer plants maize in Otavi, another farmer in Omosadi plants mahangu.
Mm.
Well, you have a seed supplier, probably in India, that's selling pearl millet or that's selling maize out of South Africa, Panar. Then you have a fertilizer supplier that's selling to AgriGrow or that's selling to Stark Ayres or another fertilizer distributor. So then you have the transport industry that has to transport that seed. It has to be shipped from India by ship to the port of Walvis Bay, and then it's trucked The seed is trucked, the fertilizer is trucked from maybe Gauteng or Northwest Province to Namibia, et cetera, et cetera. Then behind that, you have companies that blend potassium, phosphorus, and nitrogen together to give you that 10-20-10 blend of fertilizer. So if you think of the ecosystem, you could say a Namibian young person today could be in agribusiness and not own a cow and not own 1 hectare of land because they might be driving a 5-ton refrigerated bucky that's carrying carcasses of pork or carcasses of lamb or fresh produce to the various shops. I think we have 9 chains of grocery stores in Namibia. I think we have something like 400 different retail grocery outlets. And so every single day you have distribution. So you can be in the agribusiness value chain and own a transport company that refrigerates fresh produce or provides freezing cold storage for carcasses. So it's a huge industry. But the primary industry of agriculture places tremendous pressure on industrialization. So when will Namibia get to the point where, let's say we start by importing tractors, then we go to assembling what we call SKD, slightly knocked down, or CKD, completely knocked down, where we take the disassembled tractor and then we assemble it locally. And then we have VTC start machining parts, key parts of that tractor. And before you know it, the students at VTC or NIMT or what have you have created a tractor that is suitable for Namibian soils. And so this is the gateway. Value chains give you, they unlock, they are the chapters in the book. If I was the dean of either business school at NUST or IUM or UNAM, I would say for your business students and your agricultural students, they need to be seated. They need to have classes in the same classroom. And what one of the assignments could be, take the potato industry and unlock that value chain. We import over $100 million a year. I'm told from, I think principally from a company called McCain's Frozen Chips, 7mm catering cut.
Oh, so they also measure the frozen produce.
Yeah, so you have 7mm, 10mm, you have skinny fries, you have that sort of thing. You have the proper Namibian chips. But you mean to tell me that Namibia cannot produce the same cultivar of potato that stays white golden in the hot oil that doesn't brown very quickly? That's a restaurant standard. You'll find that many of the restaurants here, I don't know about 2026, but a few years ago, they would not buy
the local
potato chips from a local producer because they needed that species. So you can see now, you plant a potato, you have to buy the seed. You need fertilizer. You need traction. Those are three industries right there. Those are three business opportunities for someone. Then you harvest it. You're going to need the paper bags or you're going to need the net bags. So that's an opportunity for somebody.
Then you need the storage.
Then you need the warehouse. So somebody has to build a warehouse where the temperature will not be above, let's say, eight to 10 degrees. And then finally, someone has to process that potato into a chip, then flash freeze it, and then package it in a 1 kg bag. So you've got plastic packaging. That's Namib Plastics. You've got refrigeration. So companies that provide cold storage or build the kind of farmer cold storage where he or she can hold their carcasses. So this is how we have to look at agriculture. Don't look at agriculture
as just
limited to a maize farmer or to a livestock owner. There are thousands, for every vehicle, there's 3,500 components that go into a car typically. Same with the baki. So when you look at the agricultural industry, there are many opportunities. There are things called ag tech. We're using GPRS. We're using 5G. We're using these sensors in the fields, and they will tell us when to water our crops, when to water our spinach, when to water our tomatoes. And all of these products end up in these 400 grocery stores across the 14 regions. That's how we have to see this market. So when the Minister of Agriculture, Honorable Vamwani, when she's holding up that photograph about that regarding the phytosanitary protocols for the grapes, there's packaging for grapes, there's distribution, there's climate control for the grapes, there's the companies that do the paperwork, the outbound processing, your exporters, your inbound for all of the inputs and soil amendments that go into grape cultivation. So it's not limited
And that ecosystem extends beyond the place where the grapes are going to be cultivated. Mm. So as many markets as we can exploit for our industries, for livestock, for fresh produce, for grains, for legumes, pulses, you know, beans, that sort of thing, that's a great opportunity. I think the last example I'll give you on that is if you go into any grocery store and you go to the bean section, the dry bean section of the popcorn, you'll see two brands. Anyone have a guess at what they are? Two brands.
Koo and Rhodes.
So that's in the tin can.
Dry beans.
So Lion.
Yes.
And Imbo.
Yes.
Lion is owned by Pioneer Foods, which is owned by Pepsi.
Oh, yeah. They're just down the shelf from the canned beans. Ooh,
there you go.
Yeah.
And then Imbo is owned by Tiger Brands.
Yeah.
So Namibia, there are three places in Namibia where you could really optimally produce beans. You could probably produce beans in more than these three places. Mm. But Arandas, Stampriet, and Otavi would be three areas where you could produce these particular beans, like cultivation in the wintertime, especially the lentils.
Yeah.
But most of these beans are packaged in a 500 milligram plastic bag, and they're branded. But they're all coming from outside of Namibia. If you look at the total consumption, you could get that information from the store managers of Vorman Fresh and Pick and Model and Spar and ShopRite and OK and Choppies and Ronnie and all of these others. Mm. There's nothing to stop a Namibian, if he doesn't want to produce the bean, identify a farmer that produces the bean, just buy the beans in bulk, buy 10 tons of beans, and then package them in these 500 gram bags. Put a nice brand on it. Put a celebrity. You know, we have a lot of soccer or football stars. Mm. We have a lot of we've got the Olympian Mboma. I mean, talk to people and get that celebrity integrated into that brand packaging. Why must we sit jobless importing things that we buy every day that we could produce
every day,
add value to, and then distribute to, you know, throughout our 3.2 million population in Namibia? So that's how we have to look at the president's visit to China.
Yeah.
She's doing an excellent job of selling opportunities in the country that will benefit, obviously, the Chinese, but they certainly will benefit the Namibians before those products leave the country.
There's another component also of agriculture. It's one that Helmut and I have spoken a lot about, Mr. Branch, specifically like the textile industry. I discovered like 2 years back when I tried looking up, does Namibia produce cotton? And I discovered we actually export the cotton. But there's the same example, but we export the thing. And I discovered it on the UN, what's the UN website's name? The one, the whole data website, UN Comtrade, that platform. And the funny thing about it is, one of the things, obviously, for a country to naturally follow the industrial route is to try and sort out its immediate needs, like clothing, like food, and these other particular small aspects where you can create
You get so much more with the ShopRite price, because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg real good frozen mixed chicken portions, only 104 Namibian dollars 99. 5 kg nice rice parboiled white rice for 89 Namibian dollars 99. And 1 litre clover long life full cream milk or low fat milk for a low 22 Namibian dollars 99 each. Deals valid until 19 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Coming back to your listeners there from the quick break and from the quick ad break, Mr. Branch, where I just left off was like things like textiles, specifically clothes. There's a running joke we once had here at Eagle FM about Namibia not being able to produce its own underwear and its own toothpicks. I'm sorry for the listener for using that particular scenario, but we have the potential, obviously, to grow some of these crops, the ones like cotton, and to actually multiply it. But it's usually also, like you highlighted already, where's the garment factory? Where's the storage and the processing and all these other sort of like Lego parts that you need to associate close to? Is there still an easier way also to, okay, not easy, let me not use the word easy, but is that path still open specifically?
So I'm going to put my MBA hat on for this one, because here's a problem that we have in entrepreneurship in Namibia, particularly for a large community like Namibia that is transitioning from three industries, fishing, mining, and livestock, into row crop agriculture, what we call row crop agriculture. Mm-hmm. That transition is a very steep learning curve. So Namibia can produce cotton scientifically. Mm. There are pockets of the country, I would say, mainly along the Kavango River or Zambezi River, where because it requires
a lot of water,
a lot of irrigation.
Yeah.
Or you need to be on top of an aquifer, but then the areas where we have strong aquifers don't always necessarily have good soils.
Yeah.
The second thing is you need good soil.
Yeah.
And you need to have the proper...
That one is the best one, yeah.
The proper soil, pH. Yeah. I can't think right now offhand, but I'm pretty sure that cotton is somewhere in the low sixes in terms of its propensity for hydrogen, so the pH. But then even if you can produce something, that doesn't mean that you have a business case.
Yeah.
So we can produce cotton in Namibia, but... it's doubtful that we'll ever produce cotton on the scale, for example, of Egypt, which has, you know, the Blue Nile and the White Nile running through it, the Blue Nile being 75% of the Nile. So, you know, you have to make decisions. You have limited capital. You have limited choices. And so what you want to do, let me go back to my university. You have all of these students at IUM, at NUST, and maybe we ought to create a challenge and UNAM. And pit the three universities against each other competitively and have the business students and the agricultural students kind of unpack the value chains. And so when I say unpack, what I mean is you said cotton, then you said warehouse, then you said distribution, storage, and all of those different components. Mm. What you'll find is Namibia is probably better served putting that capital and that energy and that infrastructure into food security. Many people don't know this, but during the peak of COVID, there was a rumor story floating around that some of the big retail grocery brands had 6 months of safety stock. And should that have been
depleted,
impacted or breached,
they
were only going to serve South Africa. So that means Namibia, Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, we would have been left on our own. And I think that would be a better use of that.
Yeah.
But just because you can produce something doesn't mean there's a bona fide business case for that. So, you know, as an investor, I would not put my money into cotton in Namibia. Mm. And I don't know that I would put my money into cotton unless I was in the U.S. Secondly, hemp is becoming...
I wanted to get the...
alternative, a substitute for cotton. And you'll find companies like Levi and... that they're moving away from cotton because the yield of hemp, I believe, is much higher than the yield of cotton per hectare.
Even this brand, Woolworths, they are...
they're selling...
It's a blend.
Fiber products or a blend of...
Yeah, it's a hemp, linen, hemp, cotton blend.
There you go, because they're trying to cut down costs.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same for the pharmaceutical industry. So if you took an aspirin, it doesn't slide very well in the back of your throat because it's kind of starchy. Well, in the old days, cornstarch was used.
Yeah.
But look at the cost of... let's say maize starch cost per hectare, let's say it's $1,000.
Yeah.
With cassava, where you can just tear off a limb and stick it in the ground and the limb will sprout roots, it's significantly less. It can be maybe a couple of hundred US dollars per hectare, the cost of without any fertilizer.
Yeah.
And so today, Nigeria is exporting cassava. They're semi-processing it. That's being shipped to the West into the pharmaceutical industry to help blister pack pills.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think the Democratic Republic of Congo is the second biggest producer of cassava, but Nigeria is the bigger exporter.
Yeah.
I mean, their export, whereas in DRC it's consumed. So when you talk about things like cotton, you have to say, where is my competitive advantage on the competitive landscape? Where do I have an advantage? Mm. Where am I more cost-effective in terms of cultivating, in terms of processing, and in terms of my labor, in terms of my distribution? Namibia would not be very high on the list in terms of countries that would be competitive cotton producers. Mm. But things like, if you look at products that are typically grown in the desert, for example, if we go to Corrijos, beautiful downtown Corrijos, I spent my first 2 years there in Namibia in 1994, a product like pistachio, a product like, what's the spice that I'm thinking of right now? Saffron.
Yeah.
They grow quite well in these dry, you know, I'm thinking Corrijos, Francefontaine, Sesfontein. Those are the areas where they do
Actually, no one thought about herbs, herb production. herbs and spices, yeah.
And the market for saffron, the demand for saffron has gone up because the supply has gone down. A lot of saffron was produced in, I think, Wazir province of Afghanistan, and because of the conflicts and so in Iran was also a big producer of saffron. So the production has gone down. The demand has gone up. 1 kilo of saffron, high grade, is $15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah.
1 kilo. 1 kilo of spice.
That's the size of this bottle, basically.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then you've got things like pistachio nut in the world because of how it's used. So you produce it, even if no one consumes that in Namibia, that is a cash crop. It is a crop produced solely for its cash value. But I would say start with the products that will lean toward food security and are profitable within the domestic market.
Mm.
The last point I'll make on that is I have a friend. He's a great agronomist, great economist named Wandile Shlobo from South Africa. And he's written several books. The conflict that we're having now is you have countries like Botswana and Namibia that want to produce their own.
Yeah.
Which means downstream, that's going to mean there's going to be some kind of negative impact on South Africa. And so the South Africans are advocating for free trade across the border.
Yeah.
No one knows this, but last year around September, the South Africans would not let us take, I think it was about 1,000 tons of tomatoes across the border.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they were eventually sold or rotted. But you can't say because we're in SACU that only South Africa can export and all the borders must be open. That means Botswana and Namibia would never develop the full value chain of their agribusiness sectors. And we are destined to do that because we have good leadership within our Ministry of Agriculture. So that's going to be a bit of a turbulent ride, I think, over the next couple of years. But I foresee Namibia becoming proficient down the value chain, not just producing the crop, but proficient in terms of storing, producing. We've just come across two apple varieties that can bloom in hot weather, and Namibia imports $140 million a year in apples. All you have to do is go to the Namibian Agronomic Board and read their annual reports from any of the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for us not to produce apple. I think we can produce it competitively at a price which is affordable within our market. I'm not saying the South Africans can't produce that more cost effectively, but they can produce the product cheaper, but we can employ our people and we can unpack the full value chain. So the production of apple, then you've got the processing into juices, the packaging that has to go, so we need more polyoaks or companies like that. Then you have distribution, so we need people to drive these 5, 10, 20-ton trucks. We need more of that. We need more refrigeration, so we need more of the air conditioning units that sit at the front of those canopies that carry this. And then, you know, we can ensure that the children that benefit from the, I think it's the child school feeding program, that they get an apple a day, which is known to reduce things like colon cancer and all types of illness, among children. So it's a matter of when will Namibia exploit what is sitting on the table? But surely these things are sitting on the table. I think it's up to the universities and our high schools to create awareness that these opportunities are sitting there, because many of us think we're unemployed because there are no opportunities. Many of us are unemployed because we are not aware of the opportunity, or the opportunity is not necessarily visible 3D. It's our job, your radio station, myself, your colleagues, to just get that word out.
Yeah.
And if we can have a favorable impact on the operationalizing of agricultural policy, agribusiness policy in this country, then all the better.
100%. On that note, dear listeners, that has been Mr. Forrest Branch giving us a quick, it was quick because we can only have him for a year for so long, and a brief explainer also into some of the can I call it low-hanging fruits?
That's what it is.
The commonly used phrase, basically. Yeah. But on that note, dear listeners, we'll be taking a quick break and we'll be back on after this. And on that note, stay tuned for the Home Run right after this.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe odite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda daily nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabu ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa bura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
And coming back, dear listeners, there from the quick break, as well as also transitioning into where we left off with the conversation, was also with Mr. Branch. We only could have him here for a good 20, 30 minutes-ish. And Helmut, your particular thoughts first, apologies, as my co-host, colleague, that you didn't have the opportunity to ask a question. My apologies, but yeah, just your thoughts.
Ni hao, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
We had to start off with a Chinese greeting, eh?
Oh, of course. We're talking about China-Namibia relations today, so we may as well just start from, I'm told that to understand people, you first have to understand their culture, and to understand their culture, you have to understand their language.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I'm giving Mandarin a shot because 10,000 alphabets or more than that, I would just stick to technology, which is something that I found interesting. But before we get into what we have on the table today, which is the home run version of the discussion based on the president's visit to China. Yeah. Mr. Branch pointed out a lot of things, especially when it comes to just how many pieces must come together for just one aspect of an economy. Take, for example, one product. Cotton, for example, and toothpick, for example, or you can just pick any agricultural produce, and you look at the economy that is required, not the economy that it requires for you to produce that particular fruit, but the type of economy that you can supply that fruit into in terms of after you produce it in your farm. Take, for example, what you need to produce a particular fruit, like an apple, for example. You need, like Mr. Branch pointed out, in terms of agriculture, it's not just it's not just one particular fruit. It's just any agricultural produce. You first have to understand the environment that particular product or produce thrives in. And you have to find out its demand on the type of soil it thrives in, whether it's acidic soil or neutral soil or alkaline soil, but most plants will do well in the near neutral zone.
Yeah.
And after finding all that out, you first have to find out, what size are you planning on producing this on? And since since the main goal is to go commercial, you're talking about a very large scale. Do you have this land available? And what type of agricultural equipments do you need? Now, all these things what type of agricultural equipments do you need in terms of plowing and irrigation and planting and all these things? Now, whether you're looking at it from planting, irrigation, planting, plowing, irrigation, all these are, for the most part, a lot of mechanical components that were basically put together. And all these things require skills, not just to manufacture, but also to maintain in the time of their use. So when you look at it from the wider angle, like Mr. Branch pointed out, you realize that by just picking one agricultural produce, you are looking at multiple discussions that you must have in terms of what you will need to bring this agricultural produce literally to fruition.
Yeah.
And after producing it, after producing that particular agricultural produce, take an apple, for example, you realize that not only can it be eaten just like that once it's ready, it can also be used in a lot of beverages.
How about, why does our conversation also resonate with the organic discussion we had last year? Do you remember the guy with the
organic fertilizer?
No, not the organic fertilizer. No. The other guy. The guy that grew the what was the vegetable in outside in Kurunkuru that nobody wanted?
Broccoli.
The broccoli, yeah. Why does it sound closer to that particular discussion?
No, it sounds closer, but the only, let me just say, a little tiny mistake homeboy made was chose the wrong market.
True.
Yeah, you know, the produce itself, the soil and the produce irrigation and everything seemed to have worked out well, which is why he produced a lot of it to, enough to sell. But the thing is, the market he was trying to sell it to, they're like, we're okay with the leaves, but that ball thing in the middle there looks a little suspicious.
The leaves were the last option, Albert.
The leaves are fine. The leaves are fine.
The leaves are the last
option. That thing in between there. What the heck is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. So, yeah, it does sound familiar. Yeah, it does sound familiar. Not just that you have, it's like, not just that you have to produce something that have to be consumed.
Yeah.
As long as you can find a market, if you can find a market of that particular product, and that's what I got from Mr. Branch, you can produce anything as long as you have a market for it. Even if that market is outside Namibia, it's all about diplomatic and economic relations. And, lucky for us, we have, a lot of intergovernmental, or more like the intergovernmental organizations and the trading blocks. You have your ECOWAS, your SACO, and you have Africa Continental Free Trade Area that's still we are still trying to get off the ground. And all these things gives you that opportunity of, okay, you can produce it, but if you don't have available market for it here,
yeah.
And there is an available market in DRC or Zambia or Zimbabwe, that's what embassies are for.
Yeah.
That's where negotiations now comes into play.
Should we actually, okay, I'm sorry for posing a question, but
post the question.
Okay. Should we actually be proud of this particular state visit that the president had to China?
From a diplomatic standpoint, I would say yeah. Because the president also visited high institutions that look at technology among not just agricultural, but also technology.
Yeah.
But the technology part is the part that I, not just the technology part. Now, the visit to high institutions is something that I found very fascinating because China academically is through the roof in terms of the research and development that their university is associated with. And they produce annual reports of just how competitive with your Ivy League institutions that you find in the West.
Yeah.
And China seems to be dominating and on a competitive level even with the world renowned Ivy League universities found in the West. So when it comes to if you want to do research and development, because from research and development comes your own knowledge.
Yeah.
Your own knowledge that you can just document and also just, slap your own intellectual property rights to it and your own copyright laws, if anyone would like to use your technology, then you can, they will have to go through you.
Yeah.
And of course, that has always been and will always be most likely for a fee.
Yeah.
So the visit to high institutions is something that I also found fascinating and, that is because it feeds into the overall south to south discussion. Developing countries, understanding the need to develop together and also not just developing from trading with each other in terms of physical products, but also trading with digital products. This is where your tech companies comes in. And also trading in knowledge exchange.
Yeah. The reason why I asked that question.
Yeah.
So, one of the stops that the president had was at a city known as Chengdu. Chengdu
is in Sichuan province.
Yeah.
Chengdu is also known to have, besides the history and, you know, the good aesthetics and the beautiful, you know, surrounding area of Chengdu, around the province itself, it's also one of the sort of like highly industrialized provinces of the country.
Yeah.
And the other city she visited was in Shenzhen. Shenzhen is on the other side. Chengdu is closer here to the Bangladesh-India border.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now in the province of Sichuan. And mm-hmm. Chengdu and Shenzhen mm-hmm. is, Helmut, is literally on the borders there onto Hong Kong. Now, the reason why I'm showing these particular things is that Shenzhen, there was a tagline known as Shenzhen Speed, where they built all these skyscrapers, just showing you the photo, Helmut, all these skyscrapers in Shenzhen were built literally would be built within a year.
I think that's standard when it comes to the Chinese construction speed.
It's not just that, but I'll leave the construction speed for now to one side, because
I mean the most commonly used example is the railway comparison between the US and China.
Well, no, that's the California high speed rail and China.
California and China.
Yeah. And California has still not yet gotten off the ground.
Yeah, like who is this? Like John Stewart once put it, that when the Chinese wants to build a bridge, they just go ahead and build it. But we start by debating what to name it.
Why does that sound like Namibia?
Of course it sounds like, because it is like Namibia.
That sounds like Namibia. So Shenzhen, ne? If you go and look up what Shenzhen is good for, Shenzhen is good for, actually, it's the home for BYD, the mm-hmm. electronic vehicle manufacturer,
yeah.
Known also as Build Your Dreams or something like that.
That's what BYD stands for?
Yeah, Build Your Dream or something like that. In English, not even in Mandarin. So.
So we just decided to translate it.
No, literally. The letters.
So that's the literal translation.
That's the literal label of the thing. Now, when you try and look up what is, you know, what is Shenzhen good for, Shenzhen can be perceived as China's own Silicon Valley in terms of technology innovations and the likes. And it's literally just on the other side of a hill or something, you find Hong Kong, which is a financial center and a trade center and all those other particular commercial aspects. So Hong Kong is in close proximity to Shenzhen. The scenario we're obviously seeing is that our president obviously now saw,
mm-hmm.
okay, besides seeing big lights and groot cities, not big cities, groot cities, with 17 million people in it. The president obviously also met a lot of the dignitaries in each of these cities. The other city was the city of Guangzhou. Guangzhou is also another particular sort of like financial / manufacturing hub of China. Primarily,
it comes up a lot in terms of products that are being sold out of China.
Guangzhou's old name was Canton.
That doesn't sound British.
Obviously the British would give a lot of names, but Guangzhou's old name was Canton, and it's a port city as well, so it's a key sort of like transportation and logistical city. But all these particular cities together combined have massive clusters of business, commercial impact, importance, and sort of like main particular participants. Now, the reason from this visit from the president, I'm glad she met all these particular sort of like business associations in each of these cities. So mm-hmm. it's Chengdu, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, before she obviously headed to Beijing. And then the other key thing was that there was sort of like, from what could be assessed in the speech, that the last speech that the president had before she came home mm-hmm. was the one where she said, there was an openness by the Chinese business community basically, to sort of like, what's that thing in body language? You know, like a receptive mm-hmm. body language. You know, they were open to the idea.
Good reception.
Good reception in terms of that Namibian
the welcoming atmosphere.
Is saying, and they were basically saying, yes, we will consider Namibia as a destination. Now, just to reiterate to the listeners, this is still under the global south to south development approach that was something that even the UN signed off on, because it seems that even the UN realized that a global north working with a global south, there are still going to be certain elements of animosity and certain things of some hangovers. I'll call it a hangover because last year's theme by the African Union technically is still a hangover.
Yeah.
And it's and I told you most, it was something that was somehow secretly extended for the next 10 years. I could not find a document. It just references in this particular social media post. No, it had been extended for 10 years, so it now becomes sort of like a decade. I don't know what these heads of state go and do at the AU summit at mm-hmm. the start of every year.
I think I know one thing they do.
Which is?
Actually two.
Which is?
Eat and take pictures.
Oh, the buffet and
look,
how's your farm?
Look, if you look at the relationship between much of the West and much of the West and China, one thing that you see there is that there is an unadmitted fear of the rise of the global South by a lot of countries in the global North.
Oh, you should have seen the thing that I went to last night. I'm with at
oh,
last.
Boy, yeah.
And it's the people presenting were a bunch. Okay, the one is from the British government. Then it's people from UNIDO. It's that other UN agency that helps with industrial development. Two or three of the people are also British, and they were talking as if they now discovered Namibia. I'm like, it's a.
See, this is exactly my point because one thing, I'm looking at this from from a perspective of of how a lot of developed countries, especially the Western ones,
yeah.
are looking at China's rise. What I'm seeing is any country that will rise in terms of technological advancement, education, manufacturing, and everything,
yeah.
to the level and the rate that China is growing will be a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense because right now, when you look at Africa, you have just one giant market. So it's very beneficial from a consumption standpoint.
Potential.
For the love of God. Potential.
Potential. Put the word in there.
That means if Africa, for example, just, started investing in its own textile industries, food industries, electronic industries.
Yeah.
Now you are looking at a $1.something billion, in terms of population size market that will be lost by pretty much every car manufacturer, every phone manufacturer, every food processor or every pharmaceutical company that sells their product to the African market. Mm-hmm. It's a very big market to lose. No business person would want to lose a market of this size. So that means, one way that a lot of developing countries or a lot of multinational companies that produce all kinds of products that look at Africa and basically the global South as a market for their products. One way that they are slowly losing this market is investing in their own alternative pharmaceutical or textile or all kinds of industry equipments. Now, that is losing the market.
Yeah.
And there is not a single business person, I don't care how pan-Africanist they are. Now, just flip the script. Now, picture the whole of the global north as a group of developing countries. And you have the global south, including Africa, and they are highly industrialized.
Yeah.
Now, what we would be doing is, a lot of the products that we'll be producing, where will the market come from? For the most part, we'll send everything to Europe.
Yeah.
Now, we'd think we'll just sit there and appreciate Europe growing out of consuming our products. No. It would mostly be a threat because that's our market. That's the most painful thing about capitalism and business.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I think the most rational thing the most rational conclusion anyone can make is that when a country is developing, you'd actually appreciate its development because it's, you know, it doesn't have to depend on you for things like aid, for example.
Mm.
Except when you look at it from a commercial standpoint, a country developing and beginning to produce its own stuff means you losing a market.
Yeah,
and that is not good for business.
No, it's not. I mean, okay. Amut, can I take out some of your sort of like your alarmist words?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, taking out the word threat, taking out the word losing, what I've now realized, for example, the biggest threats for many of these car companies, for example, minus the Chinese companies, the car companies.
Hey, I thought you took out the word threat.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying the biggest threat for them.
The biggest threat, yeah.
Is them having to find a, is themselves.
Yeah.
They have to change with regards to the just energy transition agreements.
Yeah.
So their governments, for example, like in Germany, the big threat is that Volkswagen has to let go of 100,000 people.
Is that part of the energy transition?
Yeah. They have to transition. It's part of the legislation that the German government signed as being part of the EU and the EU's just energy transition plan. So it technically means the threat is themselves to themselves, their governments to themselves.
You're shooting yourself in the foot. That makes a lot of sense.
So,
I mean, I understand you.
Well, here's the thing, Amun. If you're trying to grow or produce green hydrogen here in Namibia.
Yeah.
You have to be most market leading in consumption of green hydrogen in Germany. So this technically means that you must have the people, the workforce that are manufacturing the goods for your people and your economy and your market to absorb the green hydrogen produced by Namibia or the green steel produced here in Namibia. But let me move it to another level where I am now taking out your alarmist language also. When we look at what's going to happen a lot more, what's already happening is, it's the one time we only touched on this discussion, it's the only time that we actually exhausted it, was the government subsidies for this just energy transition discussion. Now, Namibia on its own side is trying to subsidize locally that National Youth Fund thing. In terms of job creation, business creation, and business entities. Another dimension, for example, is that the EU is now obviously also now doing it a lot more aggressive now. They are showing up a little bit more aggressive as well for their businesses as well. Besides the things that you and I spoke about, like adopting or throwing out Microsoft or throwing out, what was the other program?
The French adopting Linux for their public office.
Yeah. Besides the Microsoft. Yeah.
And a lot of other browser social media platforms.
Yeah.
And all that, yeah.
So, besides that development now happening, the biggest concern is that the Europeans now have to lead, which they have done before, but it was obviously at our expense as Africa. Now, here's the thing. Why I keep throwing the word potential every time when you speak about Africa, I throw the word in potential. Remember to say potential.
For the love of God.
is like what Mr. Branch just explained now to us.
30 years of potential.
They are low-hanging fruits, right?
Yeah.
The reason why I also asked him about the cotton discussion, Albert, was primarily he's obviously someone that's out in the sun in the agricultural sector who has seen soil structures of this country potentially. I've seen only a handful. I don't have the luxury of going to everybody's farm and seeing what they do there. But at the heart of the discussion has been, we've only been thinking with our bellies when it comes to agriculture. Belly economics, not belly politics. Meaning?
So we have a belly both.
We have a belly both, yes. But political economy obviously plays a part. Mm-hmm. Yes. Meaning, people that are elected to make a decision that impacts economic
developments, policies, and trends. That is obviously the key thing here. Now, I am happy for what the president did. I was just a little bit confused that she first went to China and not to the EU first.
Okay, please explain the confusion.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. I don't know if you remember some of the audios that I shared about the EU events happening in Namibia, where the EU claims they are now Namibia's biggest trading partner. But remember, the EU is not a country.
Yeah.
It's a collection. Countries. It's a collection of 27 countries. Yet, South Africa and China are Namibia's direct two biggest trading partners.
Yeah.
China predominantly with mining, and South Africa predominantly with everything else that we see here, even what we're wearing and in the studio already. Yeah. So everything else comes from South Africa. Now, the rule, the discussion about trade substitution is that Mr. Branch highlighted a lot of it. Potatoes, the spice, some other particular crops as well. But in many scenarios, he made a very good point about we are thinking too much about if you grow the apple has to be packaged, it has to be in the shop. You're not talking about growing the apple and making apple juice, buying a container to store the apple juice in, having storage, building a marketing campaign to promote a locally produced and value addition product, and thus expanding into the actual food empire. Ne?
So, in other words, the governor of the Kavango West region had a point when she said
The
watermelon juice.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, she did. She did have a point. I mean, she said it with so much fervor. We have to give her brownie point in terms of that, you know, contribution to industrial knowledge of Namibia.
So don't just look at it from eating that watermelon or consuming that watermelon directly. But I think one thing that I just discovered when we were talking about different food standards.
Yeah.
Especially, different food brands, why you'll find the same, why you'll find one product of, of a same food brand, in markets like the US, and it has a whole list of ingredients, and the ingredients of that very same product from a same brand has different list of ingredients in the EU market.
Yeah.
One thing that I discovered from that is that food is used a lot when it's used a lot as food additives.
Yep.
You can use synthetic ones, or you can use especially for your breakfast cereals, for example.
Yep.
If you want something to have, or your snacks, if you want to have a watermelon flavor or carrots flavor or orange flavor. Now, in all these aspects, you can use a synthetic orange flavor or carrot flavor in not just a flavor, but also in coloring or as a colorant. Or you can just use the agricultural produce itself, yeah, which is what the Canadian government required from one American company that supplies them with, I'm not sure if that was a breakfast cereal or tomato sauce.
Mm.
Yeah. They required them to use carrots instead of something synthesized in the lab that look and taste like carrots. I think the same can be done. The same can be true for a lot of agricultural produce. You can take watermelon and just go full stebby stebby on the table, or you can just or you can make juices of it.
Why would you say stabby stabby, Helmut? Why?
You can't eat a watermelon without practicing how to steak, but
All puns eliminated from that case. I'm sorry.
Anyway.
Let's stabby stabby. I'll stick to stabby stabby.
So let's stick to stabby stab. Yeah. Now, so you can use it. So it can be used in more than just one of those. And there are basically a lot of there are a lot of ways of looting of looking at using one agricultural produce.
Yeah.
So that means there are even more ways at of looking at using or commercializing from multiple agricultural produce.
Yeah. But okay, obviously there's a lot of particular things that obviously also play a role in like the agricultural sector.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key things has always been to get to the next level of development. And this is where I'm asking this particular question after we did that article in the e-paper, the one about the 29-1 jobs ratio, specifically just for green hydrogen.
Yeah.
Now, that was a measurement just for green hydrogen production, dear listeners, so did you know? Mm-hmm. But we didn't do a similar assessment outside of the broader industrial developments Namibia wants to achieve. We also didn't look at the broader sort of like scenarios of, hey, why can't we do this in this scenario or try to achieve that goal in that scenario and so on. And I'm glad that, for example, that what's his name? Mr. Branch highlighted a textile crop like hemp.
Mm-hmm.
One of the core things, Hamoud, Namibia has to look at. It has to look at, for example, certain particular restrictive laws on certain particular industrial products. Now, I keep calling hemp an industrial product. I have an issue specifically. There is an advocacy group. They are known as the Cannabis Users of Namibia. Or is it a Cannabis Associate or something like that? Is the entity's name. They are campaigning on the discussion of rights, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom of choice to consume said particular, you know, the wild sister of hemp. You know, the wild sister of hemp, you know, the other one that also can grow wild.
Mm-hmm.
The one that has higher levels of making you slightly go haywire. And making you eat up all the food in your house for no reason.
The one that makes you think you know how to speak patois.
Yeah. We obviously have like localized, internalized in the broader Namibian discourse scenario. This is one of the things that I want us to get rid of specifically. You see, the president, obviously, with her delegation, which includes a whole bunch of cabinet ministers, they were trying to achieve certain particular economic goals. Yeah? In Namibia, there's an opportunity for even Namibians, ordinary Namibians, to achieve other particular economic goals. As I stress this, Herman, I find in pharmacies, what's the thing's name? Cannabis oil, a bottle.
Yeah.
I find in pharmacies in Windhoek, cannabis oil produced in South Africa.
Get so much more.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 750 mils Right brand sunflower seed oil. Only $29.99. 5 kg top score super maize meal for only $69.99. And 2 kg Right brand golden brown sugar for a low $36.99. Deals valid until 19 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Definitely not talking from experience, but go on.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Don't worry, guys. Whatever you heard there was just that second half of that sentence.
Thank you.
As we come back, obviously, from the short break right there, you're listening to the Home Run crew. For now, it's going to be the duo, specifically here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. The point I wanted to make quickly before, before the ad break was, I would walk into a pharmacy here in Windhoek, most pharmacies that stock this product. And I would find various particulars like seed oils and plant oils on a specific section of the shelf. And part of these products are cannabis oil. Now, these products produced by a company in South Africa known as, what's its name? Credi or Cred. It's got a very weird label, but yeah, the Credi Group. Yes. This is obviously also a scenario in terms of how value addition is and value addition opportunities are seen in other parts of the world, even as close as right next door to us, because the discussion we had about hemp specifically is that hemp is an industrial product. Hemp had been used in making clothing, in making other particular industrial products, and for example, like the sails of sail ships, ships that used sails, and even ropes for that matter. And it's a product that can grow pretty quickly. Specifically, it's a crop that can grow very quickly. And it's a crop that you can harvest multiple times in a calendar year. The dimension has been, we are sitting with legislation that is so restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
That is so... Let me position this to you, Hamud. Last week on Ulwazi, Francisco highlighted here that the opportunities there for Airbnbs and so on and so forth. And I cited in during that particular discussion that you do know you're making that particular statement potentially with Namibia Tourism Board's recent announcement that they would seek some sort of a legal avenue for some sort of a penalty to penalize homeowners or people who are property owners trying to list things on Airbnb without informing them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, out of all of this, you can clearly see that it's highly punitive. It's about punishing people where people are trying to find business opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for some reason, we in Namibia, we're not addressing this mentality. Why must we penalize people if there's an opportunity right there whereby this is not about having an illegal sort of like business venture. Mm-hmm. It's just, let's for example say, you know what a hemp leaf looks like, and you know what a cannabis leaf looks like. Okay, I'm not saying you, but the person has to go...
Oh, I know the difference. Okay. But I don't have any in my car or bag or pockets.
You don't have
or
a
shoes.
Car, Helmut.
I know. That was in a reference to Namco. I'm glad you missed the joke. Anyway.
Okay, let's come back. Oh, that joke. I almost, that's a low blow, bro. That's a low blow.
Took a while.
That's a low blow, Helmut. But anyway, remember that was a company car. That was a company car.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that was not a personal car. But yeah, when we've got to look at, you know, registering certain particular projects, products and items, the concern has always been, how does law enforcement sometimes also play a role?
Okay, I think back to the example of the Namibian Tourism Board.
Yeah,
that you pointed out. Do they not want people to participate in the Airbnb business opportunities, or they do not want them to participate in that business without going through them?
You first have to go through them.
So that means it's just a regulatory measure they're putting in place. Not that they don't want you to participate. It's just that you have to go through them for you to participate.
Yeah. So back in last month, the NTV cited that it is unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
Using the word unlawful.
Yeah.
And you and I know that to use the word unlawful means there must be a law.
Legislation's in place that's restricting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was cited here is that has warned that it is unlawful to offer overnight accommodation without being registered. But you can offer overnight accommodation to your brother, your father, your sister, your mother, your cousin. And they could still pay you a fee.
Yeah, I think that's primarily... What?
Yeah. Look, if they are married and stuff like that... That's why I say they could still. It's an opportunity.
You know,
for family members to basically rob each other in some way or another. But yeah.
You know, I find, you see, one of the reasons why I find that rational is because the authorities will have to get involved if something goes south. Like, you know, when something breaks in that house, who gets to fix it? Or if someone gets hurt in the process.
Yeah.
What regulations are going to come in place in terms of remedying the situation?
Yeah.
Whether it's something, you know, you give accommodation to you give accommodation to a guest, and then you wake up in the morning with your television gone, and now the police have to come, you know, the authorities have to come in, or a guest from a different country books accommodation in a certain area. And then they are Jamal Khashoggi. And the thing is, the authorities will have to come. The point I'm making is,
dismembering is not a joke.
And that was low. Look, my point is, I think that's somewhat what the Namibia Tourism Board is trying to get ahead of. Yeah, in the event of something of disagreements.
No, but it's already happening.
Who gets to settle? Yeah, exactly. It's already happening. Yeah.
There's a listing I once saw just a few months back, but I know that listing is still there.
Yeah.
And you will find it on certain particular platforms. $1,000 a night. Now, that technically means it's not for a Namibian.
Definitely not.
This is a flat net that is fully furnished.
It's fully furnished, yeah.
It has got all the basic, you know, conveniences there.
Yeah.
It's two bedrooms.
Yeah.
It's in the center of the city, not here, this side of Independence. It's here in Auschwitz. And you would ask yourself a question in terms of...
I think there are several of those across...
And you would ask yourself a question about, but what's wrong with this? This is probably a person who's sitting with a piece of real estate.
Yeah.
And they want to make quite a reliable amount of money as often as possible. Now, here's the thing. This is a property owner.
Mm-hmm.
This person doesn't have to register it as a business. Hence, when you look at it, yes, they cite here there's some sort of a legal penalty of like 200,000 or 20,000 Namibian dollars. Yeah. Upon conviction, offenders may be fined up to 20,000, imprisoned for up to 2 years or both.
Okay, but they must have provided a justification as to why they because that's a ridiculous amount of money to fine someone for
your personal property.
Exactly.
Because here's the other thing. The Act requires any person intending to operate on an accommodation establishment to apply to the NDB for registration before offering services to tourists or paying guests. Now, if you're doing this for a wedding with your family,
mm-hmm.
if you're doing this for your... for example, say your friends, and your friends are willing to pay like $100 a night because water is not free, electricity is not free.
I want to be friends with your friends because mine willing to pay. And
yeah, how much you just have to give them opportunity cost. You just tell them, listen, my bro, it's either you in the pavement or it's you sleeping inside
a park bench.
You know, it's straightforward stuff. Either you get to know the not so nice squad at Zoo Park. or you are indoors in winter. Straightforward stuff. So, things like that. Now, this is but one scenario. And this is the tourism sector specifically. The biggest concern I've got is the education sector.
Yeah.
Because the president obviously went there with the education minister. She also cited specifically that sport has to play a particular role in terms of China-Namibia relations. China is not the top country in any sport category that I can think of. I am sorry. China does not dominate in any sports category. They've got money, yes. But I'll be honest. I've played sport. I'll be honest. China is not a competitive element in sport. They never have been. I don't know if they will be, but they're not convincing me. And table tennis does not count as a sport, Helmut. As I believe, table tennis does not count. You can't be exporting, people to other countries who then represent those countries and they represent them as diaspora against you and still beat you.
Look.
You must almost that meme about the table tennis champion from the US, the one from Australia, the one from Canada, the one from France. All of them were Chinese diaspora.
That's like the World Cup and, and black people.
You so sad, Africans.
Look, there are certain things that are just, that seem to be very regional.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, take for example, like cricket, for example.
Yeah.
Pakistan and India, oh no, like those two are like a cricket capital, that region.
And it's also a scenario of the serial winners in that sport, being Australia.
Yeah.
Because Australia is the serial winners. Yeah. The ones that are actually driving the economy is India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And
wait, Sri Lanka?
Yeah.
Really?
Because they sit right next to each other.
Next to each other. Yeah.
And then Bangladesh is like, the last one that showed up last, super last to everything.
Including a protest.
Including the dinner table. So discussions like these are usually when you look at who are your centers of excellence. Now, for the life of me, in the statement that the president had mentioning about sport, for the life of me, I'm not sold, Helmut. This is the one where she had the Guangzhou business forum.
Here's the thing.
The 9-page one, yeah.
I think it's safe to say that when it comes to sport,
yeah,
there's not a lot of there's not so much about sports going on there, especially about soccer. But then again, we can't make that point to China because they'll be like, we don't see you guys at the World Cup either. And I don't think we'll be able to defend ourselves from that. But, that's for those of you with Chinese friends. I'm just,
why were you delivering low blows to us, Helmut? What are we doing?
I'm just stating the reality.
Look, we are 3 million people. We are 3 million people.
So you're telling me they have trouble finding, like one Asian, Asian American guy put in. That you're telling me out of 1.4 billion people, they couldn't find 11 players.
Here's the thing. And I accidentally came upon these particular reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese football fans are unhappy with the direction of Chinese football, professional football.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, the scandals around the companies that owned the clubs in the Chinese Super League.
That's one thing we share in common.
And then there was the scandals about the amount of money paid for the foreign players.
Uh-huh.
Because between 2015 and now, just after COVID, Chinese clubs were paying exorbitant amounts of money. I mean,
To
foreign players. What was the guy that was sold, that Chelsea sold? Oscar, the Brazilian. Oscar sale from Chelsea to what was it? To Chinese club. It was an astronomical amount, and everybody in Europe said no one in Europe, not even Real Madrid, would have paid that money.
If you want something, you must be willing to pay. They're willing to pay
for his value in 2017. Mm-hmm. The Chinese Super League club Shanghai SIPG. Which is now known as Shanghai Port, Shanghai SIPG, now known as Shanghai Port Club, they paid him £60 million. And they offered him £400,000 per week as a salary.
Jeez.
Now, it's astronomical. Going from Europe to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Not from Europe to Europe. From Europe to Asia. Now, at that stage, there was massive money and massive investment taking place by Chinese companies and industries in the Chinese football setup. The downside has been the Chinese fans are asking questions in terms of, yes, you're trying to elevate the profile. Now, there's a difference between elevating profile of a product and actually the product delivering real results.
Yeah. So, because at the end of the day, your return on investment
is about, does China qualify for the World Cup? Has China won an Asian continental cup? Has a Chinese club reached the Asian Champions League? Has a Chinese club dominated the Asian Champions League in the Asian competitions? For example, like you would see the Spanish clubs have done. And the Spanish clubs, most of them, are basically state-owned companies. They are owned by town councils and city councils, and they are municipal entities.
Look, I think this is why I'm saying when it comes to sport, we share more in common with China than we would like to admit. The first thing that we...
Hamoud, we at least made it to... not football, but for rugby, we made it to a World Cup.
You were going to say newspaper cup. But anyway, look, the thing is... was that yesterday on Olwazi when you guys were talking about Namibia's one of the hurdle that was standing in between Namibia and hosting co-hosting COSAFA
it was AFCON.
AFCON, yes, AFCON, the one with Botswana.
Yeah.
Is one of the biggest hurdle was accommodations.
Yeah.
Do you have enough accommodations for a number of people that usually shows up to events like this?
Yeah.
What's the answer?
No, we don't. We didn't have.
We potentially still don't have.
The other concern is...
So forget the soccer stadiums.
Yeah. No, they are crucial. You at least need five. Do you know that?
Yeah, before you even get to what matters the most, like you just said, they are crucial. Before you get to them, you are just talking about these players that are going to come and the fans and everyone, because this is a very large market. It's very good for your country's identity and your country's, it boosts your economy because of the number of people that shows up, and they are going to buy a lot of goods and services.
Yeah.
So that is good. Do you have the products? Do you have the services?
No.
We don't.
Now, that is basically absorption rate. It's your rate of absorption. Meaning, are there things extra meant for, let's say, if new customers come, if a specific event happens? Let's, for example, say, Hamoud, let's look at a wedding. A wedding is a once-in-a-lifetime, ne?
Yeah.
So too is...
Namibia, it's a... Anyway. January...
It depends on the Namibian, let me say that.
Point of correction. For Wintu Kendo Shakati.
If you're urbanite like Dwight and Helmut, it's a once in a lifetime. But if you are, if you're a bush dodger and you like gallivanting.
My biology teacher liked to use the word tourist. If you are a tourist.
That's why I said bush dodger, Helmut. The guy is dodging bushes. Because he knows the other wife is looking for. So, yeah. Not a tourist, but let's go for journeyman.
Yeah,
if you're a journeyman, the discussion is obviously that each one of those communities know your face because you are married to one of the community's peoples.
Mm-hmm.
But a wedding in general is a once in a lifetime. So too is also hosting the African Cup of Nations, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you look at hosting Namibia co-hosting with Botswana right after COVID, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I think Botswana was confident about their position.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia was not confident about Namibia's position.
I don't think we are to this day.
I think I am confident about our position, Helmut.
Today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even with these two stadiums, these two mongrel stadiums that we have, and I'm calling these stadiums mongrels because... nothing is happening. The one is owned by City of Windhoek. The other one is owned by the ministry now. Because it was transferred from one ministry to another ministry. Mm-hmm. The other one is owned by the ministry. Now, what is so wrong, Helmut? Here's the concern there. Independence Stadium will have to change drastically. I mean, like, it'll need...
to meet the required standards.
An actual, like, roof pavilion setups.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying this primarily because we don't even know what the plans would look like and what the developments after the, what's that, the consultants whip, have to be paid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That 300 million, that's outstanding. Was it almost 600 million? It's after those guys when that leg of work is done and the actual renovation and work has commences, because we technically weren't explained 2 years back in 2024 before Minister Agnes Chongarero's time was up as minister before the elections of 2024.
Yeah.
2 years back that way. Because HD and I, we were at that same event, at that same press conference where the engineers and the architects were. And even then, they didn't divulge, you know, what is the level...
the amount of work required to get the stadiums to the standard required just for the sport to take place.
Yeah. Just to meet CAF.
Not FIFA.
Okay, CAF is FIFA. Because if you meet CAF, you can then think about hosting things. But just to meet CAF levels, Helmut. Now, the stadiums I've seen across the African continent...
So FIFA and CAF have basically the same stadium requirements.
Technically, yes. But FIFA is at a higher level if you're talking about World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
CAF is at like a regional level of, you know, we will allow you, Helmut, to get away with this. But at FIFA level, we won't allow you to get away with that same thing.
Unless you have Donald Trump's number, then...
that one too, yeah. And if you are the US and stuff, and you know, you're Infantino and stuff like that. So when we look at this dimension specifically of like the sports sector.
Yeah.
So now the president, I just want to be sure if it's the last speech he made, the one in Beijing or the one in Chengdu, but either one, she cites, you know, the education, the youth, you know, MASAC's specific mandates, plural. Now, sport, unfortunately, Hamoud, South Africa's right here. I believe Namibia has to champion a South African principle.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to fly all the way to the other side of the world to go look at sport in China.
So high institution, technology, agricultural, or more like just technology in general, whether it's, you know, a transport or agriculture and all that, or processing or industrialization, just overall. For that, we can look at China. But sports...
definitely. Because those are the same guys
that
are now becoming the biggest investors in South Africa.
Yeah. But a sport...
sports, no.
No.
South Africa won 2 Rugby World Cups in a row. South Africa's, that football team of theirs decided to qualify now recently to this World Cup. Huh? They have professional sports. Namibians are earning money in South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay, besides the match and match. But South Africans are earning money in South Africa. Now, Namibians are earning some money in South Africa. Besides the guys opening up investment accounts with Ramaphosa's money. That is a completely different dimension. That is not a legal business venture, please, guys. And please do not take our word for it as the Home Run crew. We do not advocate for such particular expansive, adventurous, as well as also risk level of risk-taking. Because...
I'm talking about sofa tourism.
Are you calling it sofa tourism?
Uh-huh.
I'm calling it sofa investment banking.
Okay.
That's all I'm calling it because, you know, there was a full-on value addition component taking place there.
Yep.
Multiple hands.
You know what's my favorite part about that heist? Not a camera was damaged.
And everybody was seen. Faces and everyone.
You're like, you know what? We're just here for one thing.
And she even allows them in the cameras are watching.
One thing.
Live. Yeah. Oh, if you guys have never seen those videos. Of those Namibians.
Like, if you're going to pull off a heist, I will respect you when you don't hurt anyone.
But, you know, Africa is pretty unique. Especially Namibian South Africa. Hiding money in a sofa.
I mean, for a president, that's really dumb.
Yes. On a farm.
Like...
that he doesn't even live on. The farm is like his I'm here with my friends event.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering it has money, I don't think it's a farm anymore. It's
Well, it's a slush fund.
It's a slash fund holder.
Yeah.
It's a slash fund entity. Because it holds onto money into sofas.
You must really have trust issues.
It's a, how did the maid know about the money in the sofa? Did she like sweep a bit too hard that day? And she was, it's here. What's this? She's probably one of those Namibians that when they spoke Afrikaans, it's here. What's this?
Okay, you know what? leave cupcakes alone.
How did she get to know about that money?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Like, how did she get to know about it? And, because I don't think that couch was just in the living room somewhere.
No, it was in a room.
Obviously, it was in a bedroom. I mean, it has got to be. But, look, if I will have, if I have a couch like that in my, in my room, I will have that in a man cave. And that place is just for me. I'm gonna clean it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's too risky.
Do you know how suspicious that looks? Come on. You are Cyril Ramaphosa.
Uh-huh.
You show up every week just to clean one room.
Uh-huh.
And all, the only thing in that room is a bed, a couch, and a TV.
Look, Africans are very easy to scare. All you just need is just, take the number 666 and paint the door red and put the number 666 there with a skull. No one is gonna get in there. Everyone is gonna think it's witchcraft. Take it from a Gavango. It works. Look, the thing is...
That's not witchcraft. How would you know? That's occultism.
That's the thing that they will think you are getting your money from some kind, some python somewhere. The whole thing, you're just getting kickbacks from some drug dealer transporting drugs through the port of Durban in South Africa.
Yeah.
That's just a cover.
I know. That is a cover, yeah. But
so technology, education, basically everything else, we could learn a lot of things from China. But sports, it's a little bit of pushing it.
Okay, in the education realm,
Education. No, there's no doubt there.
Well, we have to ask the question. After you and I, we did the discussion. Remember with the mystifying of the AS levels interview that I had.
Yeah.
We really have to understand to what extent would we then look for partnerships in the education sector?
Yeah.
Because if this is a discussion of, let's for example say, just supplying those electronic whiteboards, then yeah, no problem. Or opening up procurement of certain particular ICT technology in education offering.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. But if we now look at the involvement in education dispensation
on an academic level
of lecturers, of experts. Now you've got to ask the question, okay, what are you trying to achieve then?
Their level of technological advancement, but that is coming from the level of academic advancement. Exactly. So that means the AS, the AS level.
Yeah.
Will have to be pushed even beyond that.
Yeah.
And we are sitting here complaining about AS. That means if we want to adopt their way of doing things from an academic standpoint,
yeah,
we will have to, the AS level will have to be the basics.
Basically, yes. And somewhere...
We can do it. The level of investment in terms of energy and infrastructure required is one that will have to push really hard, because you are talking about students that will have to put in a lot of energy in their books.
And forget about school sports.
Put all that. Oh, that explains why they are terrible at sports. Yes.
Helmut. Well, look, it's sometimes.
I think it's a very fair trade off because there's one Chinese girl that made a video on TikTok, basically making a mockery of how difficult it is for her to buy souvenirs every time she visits her country, because wherever she goes and she buys souvenirs, when she looks under on the label, it's made in China.
Mm.
Yeah, so if you look at, I think for China, sports was not a priority in terms of investment, not just for financial wise.
Yeah.
But I think that's why they are, you know, sports is what, is something that they are playing catch up with today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it wasn't a priority. Back then, it was industrialization, which they have achieved. Industrialization is going to take a very long time because it starts from the classroom.
Mm.
And you have to push it all the way to your industries. Yesterday, when I was looking at the International Labour Organization, the alignment between crimes being committed in certain parts of the world, and they used Taylor and Francis used KwaZulu-Natal and South Africa, KwaZulu-Natal in terms of the increase in murder cases and lack of opportunities in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did one on the people that are caught or associated with illegal mining in South Africa and how that was being fueled by lack of opportunities.
Yeah.
And they also did one on in Accra, Ghana. And they found a very interesting correlation. And this correlation is not something that new. That's one thing they pointed out, that this is as old as time. Wherever there are lack of opportunities, people tend to be desperate to acquire something, and that drives them into doing something that they wouldn't otherwise do.
Yeah.
And one excellent example that I used in reference to that was back in 2016. The Dutch were closing down some of their correctional facilities because they were having very low incarceration numbers. So all these things. Now, the thing is, that correlation between, so one thing that they pointed out, I think that was in reference to Ghana, was to solve this problem, we need a job market and education alignment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, if what you are educating people on is not available in your job market, you are going to have a lot of educated people that don't have opportunities or that don't have a space to participate in that particular market because there's a misalignment between your academic institutions and your job market.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the problem that you see a lot in a lot of countries, including Namibia. And we have a domestic example of that, of the oversupply of teachers at low and primary school.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you still have a lot of people that are doing those particular qualifications despite the Minister of Education telling them that's a terrible idea.
And the thing is, you can't just close down the department and tell
I think that's the dilemma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the department at UNAM or at
IUM, you have an entire faculty that's
revenue
generation for that particular
institution. Yeah, you can't tell those guys, okay guys, take a hike now for 10 years. Stop training teachers for lower primary.
You'd be the worst person to break this news for them.
Because I would really go
take a hike?
I would go like, guys, what are you doing? Why are you not deviating course? You can see we've got a shortage in high school. And literally, that will bite us. In the near future,
it has already started biting in terms of employment creation because you have a lot of people now that we have a lot of people that are graduating and celebrating, taking all these type of pictures every year, and then finding out that the course they studied for is overcrowded in terms of the manpower it requires. I think it's safe to say that education-wise, so basically in all aspects of things in Namibia, we still have a lot of room for expansion, but do we have the money to expand at the rate that is required for us to absorb all this, all the graduates that are graduating annually?
Mm.
I don't think we have that. So, education-wise, we can look up to China.
Yeah.
Because their education system seems to have laid the foundation that have led them to the level of industrialization that they are today, where they are making, they're being able to produce their own chips. And one thing that scared the Western world, I think about a month or two ago, is the lithography machine that's made by, LM something, the Dutch company. They have a version of their own. How they managed to make it, the Western world started going, hey, how did they manage to make one of these? Because the lithography machine technology is a highly secretive, heavily guarded piece of technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means, their research and development combined with a well-known, worldwide, well-known corporate espionage they can pull off a lot of things. So industrial-wise, education-wise, agricultural-wise, we can look up to them.
Okay.
Sport.
Yeah. There's another thing that I was hoping would be at the forefront of this discussion, but it's somewhere...
President's visit to China or home run?
No, President's visit to China, which is still for the home run for today.
Yeah.
But it was sort of like... there at the back, because much of the discussion was fanfare on industrialization, on machineries, on just energy, you know, all the shiny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Helmut, back in 2016, Chinese President Xi Jinping came out with a policy titled, "A house should be made. A house is there to be lived in. It is not there to be speculated on." I had to go read up on this thing, and it was actually something that he delivered at one of the Communist Party events of that year, 2016.
Yeah.
Now, they realized, the Chinese government, that there was issues specifically with speculation taking place in housing prices, in the housing market for China locally. But we only saw the true sort of boiling point here in 2022. Remember Evergrande? The property company.
Yeah.
And we only saw that in 2022 at the back end, 6 years after that.
Mm.
So what was happening in China was that government policy was literally the mechanism to tell people, if a house costs $100,000 to make, you can probably only sell it $150,000. $1 million. There's no weird things like you're buying it.
Market prices were regulated.
Yes, yes. And now many economists in some of the discussions that analyze the Chinese house market and property market were asking the question, did China intentionally burst its own property market bubble? And it seems like the evidence says yes, in order because they realized that young people back in 2016 couldn't access decent living or decent accommodation and stuff like that.
That sounds familiar.
And they would also need homes in future. And he came up with this particular statement, the Chinese president at the time, to cite basically and to say, homes are there to be lived in. Now, this is the question. I know where I am. I have been a staunch advocate for the past 3-4 years, specifically while we've been doing our shows here on Eagle FM. The question of how should the property market be approached? In Namibia, a lot of money is stuck
in the property market.
In the property market.
I think that's true for a lot of Western countries. There's one British guy that was talking about the same thing about the UK.
Yeah. A lot of money is stuck in the property market. And the property market is sort of like the foundational market to invest in many of these Western-oriented economies. Namibia is one of them. Mm-hmm. It's got a massive sort of like view or look towards Western-based business dealing. But
so that economic setup is the one that's driving up the prices to the point where a lot of people can afford them.
Well, Helmut, look, for example, look at how slow it's taking the agriculture bill. Not the agriculture bill, the land bill to reach a conclusion.
Mm.
It's what, been in the pipeline for 5-6 years? 5-6 years. The main aim of that bill is debating about rural land, but they're not taking consideration the real need being us in the urban centers and urban zones, which is open to any foreign investor to come into Namibia to buy property just like that. Just like that. You can fly in, you can buy just like that. This obviously should show you that there's that misalignment thing that you cited a little bit earlier.
Mm.
There's a misalignment discussion taking place. Yes, they want to regulate the real estate agents a lot better. Remember, we did the real estate agents,
the licensing.
The bill last year,
yeah.
The improved bill. But
No, it wasn't last year. It was the year. Yeah, it was. No, it was the year before, 2024. But since that ministry was now split into two parts, now we don't know where that discussion is. Then there's the discussion of looking at urban land development, where you've got citizen collectives like Shack Dwellers Federation building a lot quicker than the government and local authority sanctioned entities in terms of delivering homes. And you then sit with a particular question of this fragmentation in effort. You know, we love showing up and speaking about we have to stand together, but I can see 20 Cristiano Ronaldos on the pitch, and I'm wondering to myself, but I only need two. Why do I have 20 on the field? Who's defending?
Okay, I think it all comes down to the fear of shaking the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like you pointed out, the property market is where a lot of money is being embedded into, and it's a very profitable one because of that.
Yeah.
And anyone that have basically invested money in there does not, like if I invested millions of my dollars in the property market, the last thing I want is to shake it in a way that will sure maybe make a lot of, make the product, the services in terms of accommodation affordable to a regular individual. But that will, what will that do to the price?
It'll definitely bring it down.
If it will bring it down, that means I stand to lose millions of dollars. So that makes a lot of economic sense as to why we are reluctant, not you and me. I mean, you and I that have a problem affording the properties would want to, to ramp up the supply so that you can, to ramp up the supply using alternative building materials, for example. And that would help to bring the prices down so you and I can afford one. But if you are on the other end of the spectrum where you have invested millions of dollars in this, in this market, the last thing you want is for that, for the prices to come down, because that will mean you losing a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So now you have this dilemma of the people that invested money in the market don't want the prices to come down, but the majority of the people that cannot afford the product and the services associated with the product want the product to come down.
Yeah.
And now you have, regulatory authorities are now caught in the middle. And that is if they are not, and some of them, I think it's safe to say, are participants of the investors into the property market. So it becomes some degree of conflict of interest to it. And also, but the main reason is we don't want to shake the market. And that makes a lot of sense if you look at it, because you have to understand that an economy, a market that size may contribute significantly to the economy. Mm. That means whatever shakedown is going to happen in a market of that size is also going to impact an overall economy. And I don't think there's any public official that want to be responsible for, well, that. And one thing that I find fascinating is the response that came from just one central bank, and they did a very great job with the by telling the Ministry of Agriculture when they published and brought into force the Deeds Registries Act of 2015 in the very same day, even though the document itself that says that after publishing it you're supposed to wait 30 days before bringing it into force.
Yeah.
So what that created now, should that have been left into force, it would have created a lot of chaos in the property market itself, because we are talking about the central document of title deeds.
Yeah.
That would have created a lot of chaos in the property market and leading to a lot of people losing money. So the central bank, and this is a private central bank, had to go straight to court and tell them this is not good for our market. And this is not just good for our private for our commercial bank. This is not good for all the commercial banks and all the property market And when you're talking about all commercial banks and all property markets, you are talking about your things like, you know, like savings, rents, mortgages and all that. And mortgage bonds. And this is a very huge market in Namibia, which is part of the Namibia's overall market. Mm. So in other words, that piece of legislation alone would have led to some serious economic nightmare for the, you know, for the overall Namibian property market and the economy overall. Mm. And for conveyancers, a nightmare when it comes to explain. Look, like, the guys suing each other, especially for guys that just want to use the loophole.
Mm.
They would have gotten away with a lot of things. And we know that it's very human to exploit a loophole when you see one. I mean, we have been known as a country, especially your tenderpreneurs, for using loopholes that is in the Public Procurement Act. There are loopholes. Now, if there are loopholes in the Public Procurement Act that are being exploited, you know, just register a company, you know, apply for a tender and then abandon the project, chop the money, and if they blackmail that company, just go and register another one, because they are not going to blackmail you as an individual, because there is a legal separation between you and your company. Mm-hmm. That is a loophole being exploited in the public procurement space. That means if you have one in the property market, it would have been exploited. So again, I think that speaks to the size of the property market, yeah. The amount of money invested in there, and how important it is in terms of the overall Namibian economy, and what would happen if you suddenly shook it. And I think at some point we are going to have to, or we are going to, or we'll have to figure out a different way of having the housing discussion, because we know what the problems are, we know what the solutions are.
Because we can't wait 78 years, Helmut.
No, we can't.
In spending 78 billion.
No, at some point we will have to.
Billion a year.
At some point we will have to rip the band-aid off slowly.
Why slowly?
Because we don't want to end up in an economic chaos where everyone has a house. We'll just be transitioning the economic pain.
Yeah, but you know, technically, okay. Let's, for example, say the economic chaos is one where you, me, and a whole bunch of the colleagues, each one has a house.
No, for us, it's not an economic chaos. Very good.
Okay. Why?
Hmm?
Why?
Because we didn't invest millions of dollars in the property market, even though the cascading economic effects is most likely going to reach you and me.
Yeah, it will. But the discussion here is obviously to say, listen, meet the demand.
Yeah.
Now we don't know where the demand is because we are using an outdated number.
Of course we are.
The census tries to do something. The census only paints a picture that is sort of like partially meeting an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
But the discussion at hand has been, how quickly can you accelerate something? Now, I saw 3D printing is not the way to go, because apparently 3D printing a house is now also creating problems.
Okay. I was going to go for that. What problem does it create?
Apparently, it's something to do with the mixture and the plans and the design and how the machine basically layers.
Operates?
Yeah.
So it's not as... does it have a structural component to it? I mean, the flaws?
Well, it seems so. But it seems the structural flaw comes from the designing.
Hmm.
And how the mixture is laid
mm-hmm.
down. So far, the other options that exist, for example, in terms of, let's say, for example, okay, I really don't want to advocate for that hemp house situation. That is just problematic in all dimensions.
Hemp house?
Hemp.
Oh, hemp house.
Yeah. That's just problematic in all directions, because imagine your house literally just accidentally catching fire because your kid was running around with a match.
Yeah.
And now everybody is not capable of addressing the fire because everybody's unfortunately...
They're not going to be high. It's him, dude.
Look, there's a level of influence there. But people, everybody...
So you're looking at the size of the fire, like, potentially...
You know...
half the street could have, you know, just a weird munchies that night.
Yeah, the whole street is going one love.
Yeah, while somebody's house is burning down, and then they come and sing for the fire as well. But
one
yeah.
love.
And then there's obviously also the other innovative measures. Now, Helmut, and this has been a discussion.
Middle of the night, your uncle, no woman, no cry.
Like we said, we said hemp. We didn't say anything else. We said hemp.
Hemp. Yeah, go on.
So, other construction methods, for example, what Germany is busy testing, modular homes, even though in America, apparently, the American property market doesn't like the value of modular homes. They say that these homes lose rapid property value. But it's also a discussion in terms of what is our need. Now, our needs, Helmut, shouldn't be based upon a scenario of lack of policy or lack of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and once again, the concern has always been policy is there for guidance, and because policy is not a law.
Mm-hmm.
If a policy is not a law, this technically means that everything is still open for interpretation.
Yeah.
This means specifically that everything is still there for whoever to basically just continue with business as usual. My concern has been, we want invention, we want innovation, we want, what's the other word that goes with innovation?
Industrialization?
Yeah. And we want the technologies, but your reference to shaking the tree, we don't want to do that.
I think that's the fear. I think that's the overall fear. But you do realize that sooner or later we're going to have to make a decision. Now, I think doing it gradually, not 78 years gradually, because that's the rate we are doing it.
Gradually,
that's, you know, yeah.
By that time, half the world would have been underwater by then because of climate change.
Well, there you go. But here's the thing. So now, the painful thing about the whole shaking the tree example, and I think that, I think about that a lot, and it's one of those things that I've just come to realize how difficult it is to be in executive office.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to make conflicting decisions like this all the time. Mm. So, you are the president, and or the minister of urban and rural development.
Mm.
You want to solve your country's housing needs, and you look at the amount of money that is buried in the, you know, that is invested in the property market,
yeah,
and how it is significant to your overall economy. So, like, I don't think I would know how to address that, because on one side, I have a lot of people that genuinely need housing. And the most painful example for me every time that I think about this is the coastal areas, because every time, you have fires breaking out and people literally lose their lives. And so obviously, you don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the solution is very obvious. You need to provide non-flammable, affordable, alternative building material constructed houses.
And they do exist.
Yeah, they do exist there. They are there.
Yeah.
And we have them in Namibia. Like you pointed out several times, there are a lot of private sector players into this market that will gladly jump to the opportunity you give them to participate in terms of, alternative building materials. They are there. Now, you have that on one side. You have people that that needs housing, because you have people that needs housing. You have people that spending a ridiculous amount of money on accommodation. You have people that are spending a ridiculous amount of money on commuting because they kind of because of housing affordability issues. And you have people that now, and that's the worst of the the worst part of it is you have people that are losing their lives every time that, their wooden makeshift building material put together houses catch fire.
Mm.
So that's a terrible thing to deal with. And on one side, now you have to make a choice in between between risking to some degree, the property market losing money, and to some extent, because of the domino effect that may come out of that to your overall economy, and housing the people. So you have to balance that seesaw without breaking it apart. Yeah, I don't think I'm running for public office, because again, people need housing. And this is not new in Namibia. Everyone knows this because we sing it all the time, especially during election cycles. Yeah. Housing is a genuine need in Namibia, and the supply is not, it's 10 steps behind the increase in population.
The talk yesterday.
Now, as someone who is on the other end of the economic spectrum of not being able to afford one, yeah. I would go, you know what? Shake the tree. We'll figure it out on the other side.
Okay.
Look,
besides the tree shaking.
Yeah.
Besides the tree shaking.
Yeah.
We obviously have like key things missing also in this economy.
Yeah.
Now... The president's visit obviously was something to basically say, hey, listen, this is more about Namibia trying to tap into a friend who has gone and done the example itself.
Yeah.
The concern has been that friend did this in the 1980s.
Yeah.
When the Americans said, listen, we want you to be part of the World Trade Organization and part of the UN. And certain concessions were negotiated. And these concessions included basically allowing Chinese businesses to sell to North American businesses, which obviously led to trends. These particular same similarities are something that we don't know if Namibia is trying to pursue it. Not to say that Namibia is not part of the UN and that Namibia is not part of the World Trade Organization, because Namibia is part of both.
Yeah.
But the dimension that emanates from this is, what are we going to go and learn, Hamoud? Because let's, for example, say the shaking tree element never happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's a discussion only Dwight and Hamoud are having here. The shaking the tree never happens.
Then we have an ever-rising housing crisis.
Yes. Then we are looking at 78 billion over 78 years.
And and that is going to bring us to the instability discussion the International Labour Organization was looking at. Lack of opportunities and crime statistics, they have a direct proportionality to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it's also a dimension of specifically trying to understand, Is the distribution of development attack activity actually meeting the needs of communities across the country?
In terms of housing, I would say capital, no.
Yeah. For housing, no. For other things, it would be between a maybe and it's trying to get there scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Hamoud, a road doesn't just justify a development, like I said before. Because sometimes private sector guys, they see an opportunity, they see a development, they try to pursue it. But actually, before you and I, we continue with this discussion, we're quickly going to take a short break, dear listeners, and we're going to come back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
We come back, dear listeners, there from the quick break right there. And before we continue, we still take a quick live read. And we commence with the rest of the program right after the break. Vivitu University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work, Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science, Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8. Master of Public Health and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvita University, where everyone is an achiever. Now, before the break, dear listeners, we were exploring the aspect in terms of how maybe not assistance can be potentially sought or, you know, be sort of like accessed from China in terms of addressing certain particular needs in the country. NDB6 in its own right is a new direction of the policy framework in the country, meaning that all policy making from ministries has to be in line with NDB6 in its own right. NDB6 is also very loud and proud in terms of stating its particular desires on industrialization, where this industrialization has to take Namibians, what this industrialization has to meet, and by when. But where we are having to explore the growing pains are in the dimensions of how we're going to do this, what's going to happen, and what particular sort of like short-term strategies, methods, and techniques would have to be deployed in order to achieve certain particular goals in relation, in tandem, or in line with NDB6. Like I said, NDB6 is now the national new policy direction we've got to take. Anything older than that, unfortunately, we will have to reconsider in great length. Now, Hamoud, I was just highlighting specifically that what we now have to see Namibia's future is from NDB6's perspective,
mm-hmm.
not from anything else prior to this, even though the transport... the 2018 transport policy is, you know, in its own right, a particular sort of like visionary document I would like to hold close to my heart, because I still believe that public transport should not be privately owned. Mm-hmm. It should have real public investment, which is one of the burdens that you try to achieve. Getting back to shaking the tree syndrome. So far, for now, it mm-hmm. seems like we're going to be stuck with shaking the tree.
Every time I think about that, the conclusion I keep reaching, at least just in my head personally, is at some point we're going to have to.
Yeah, at some point yeah, we will
at some point we're going to have to, because the housing problem is going to just keep growing, and so will be the concerns.
Yeah.
And
you've already highlighted some of them.
Yeah, and so will be the concerns. And I don't think we want to listen to people every, you know, just 100 years into the future, every election cycle, people are complaining about the same thing, housing.
Or let's
say
that 78th year,
yeah.
they stumble upon a podcast session here of Dwight and Helmut on mm-hmm. the Home Run, mm-hmm. and they're saying, it's these guys were Nostradamusing Namibia back in 2026.
For how long have we been having this housing discussion?
Well, you know, just count 7-8 years in that direction. You'll find out. We realized it's an issue.
Now, I think we're going to have to work out a formula that will enable us to basically do things in a balanced way. Because, look, I understand the economic implications of shaking the tree, but you also have to understand the economic implications of not providing housing.
Mm.
Now, I don't think it takes someone with a, I don't think you need an MBA to understand that, a lot of people needing affordable housing is also a market on its own.
Which is it? It is the market. That is the market. It can't be anything else. That is the market.
Yeah.
But when you are told, for example, that the market is positioned only or exclusively for married people.
Because it needs double income.
Yeah.
That's the unaffordability component.
That is sort of like the conditionality component as well. Because there's a condition that first has to be met before you can enter into the market. But I told Francisco from Ulwazi yesterday, Helmut, that there are now Namibians who told my, for example, like my sister that now recently moved back to Rehoboth. There's a lady that told my sister, listen, we'd rather deal with paying 1,500 a month
for commuting
than paying for Vanduk's ridiculous rental prices. And the 1,500, Helmut, versus 8,000, 5,000, 7,000, 10,000, 12,000. You know, that 1,500 every time just sounds more and more
ridiculously
attractive than staying in this place. Every time it just sounds like, step over to the dark side, Dwight. Just come over to the side of logic, Dwight. Just come. Just look within yourself, Dwight. It makes sense.
And, you know, one aspect of that discussion that we are not, that we are looking at like it's an isolated incident, the expansion in informal settlement.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, opportunities are centralized in mostly in urban areas, and these urban areas have accommodation prices that are going through the roof.
Yeah.
So when people come to seek these opportunities, they realize that, okay, the opportunities are there, at least to some degree, but the prices of staying there is much higher than the opportunities are enabling one to afford. So as a result, get yourself zinc, and the more people come, the more, the more people move to urban areas, the more you see this expansion in urban area, the more you see this expansion in informal settlements. Not because, there are no houses per se.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say we have a housing issue. I would say we have a housing affordability issue. Because you have a lot of houses that are just, too expensive. So people would rather live in Babylon than find a place that has formalized accommodations.
Mm.
Because if they find one, and that is a man-sized if, because if you have tried looking for a place to move, then you have realized how difficult it is, especially in winter.
Yep.
So, you have not only, for a place like Windhoek, you have an influx of, rural to urban migration movement. And the formalized housing market, formalized urban expansion is not keeping up with that influx.
Mm.
And one reason behind that is we are not providing the houses to keep up with that influx. And that will take us back to the housing market being ridiculously high. But we don't want to diversify into alternative building materials to keep up with that influx, because that will disturb the millions of dollars invested into the property market.
Yeah. Look, Amit, you can explain all you want that millions of dollars in the property market discussion.
Yeah, it all keeps going back there. But the point is, there are people on the ground that need, not want.
Yeah, they need.
Need.
They have a need.
Yeah, and you're listening to one of them.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of us.
And it's, look, the thing is, it's not going to help. Whether we like it or not, that number is, unless we, then the problem is not going to disappear just because we don't want to disturb the property market.
Yeah.
No. The problem, especially in terms of needing affordable houses, that problem is only going to increase.
Yeah.
And the more it increases, the more anger is going to generate. And one thing about anger that is not addressed is at some point you are going to deal with a bubble that will burst, and you'll have you know, streets full of people marching for affordable housing. This is a problem you should have addressed 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's 20 years actually.
Yeah.
20 years actually ago. Now, obviously the president's visit also...
You know, speaking of modular housing, that's also an alternative that's explored in China.
Yes, because they've also got to build very quickly. They've got to meet demand very quickly. But the question is whether or not we are seeing it in Namibia. That is at the heart of everything. Eh? Namibia can innovate, Hamoud. You and I, we have got brains in our skulls. We can innovate.
I keep going back to the point, you know, to those two private entities you told me that they have alternative building material options ready on a fly. Just say the word.
Just like that. The downside is...
You have regulations and...
will they be allowed to make their money
there
back?
You go.
Will they be allowed to sell? Will they be allowed to achieve things? Huh? Just to know that in other parts outside of Windhoek and the coastal areas, the earth just needs to be serviced. Okay, let me explain it to you like this way. So my sister discovered in like in Rehoboth, to service the earth costs $10,000. And it can be deferred and broken up over 2 years. You can pay that 10 grand off over 2 years with the town council. Why? 2 years back when Mbumba went to inaugurate, was it Mbumba or was it President Geingob? 2024-2023 in Karibab or in Arandas. One of the two presidents were there for, that was Geingob in 2023 in Valfas. Sorry, minister, the previous minister of urban and rural development, Utoni, went to either Karibab or Arandas to inaugurate the handing over of service properties. And I worked out from the price, the total cost for servicing those Ervin was at like 75,000.
Huh?
Yeah. Was it like 75,000? It's just Ervin. Not even the house has been built yet. The structure's not there. Now, I just told you about Rehoboth, where you can pay for a serviced ERF, and the price and the price can be deferred over, can be broken up and deferred for 2 years. But cost to the government to service in that part of Namibia, in the western, in Irongo, on that vicinity of Irongo and Ochodonjuba.
For how many ervins?
I don't know. It was like more than 20, more than 30.
I think that makes sense for that price.
But 75,000 was heavy, Hamoud.
Heavy.
75,000 for an erf.
Wait, service. That 75K is for one erf.
For one erf.
What?
For one erf.
And that's for all of them.
But I'm telling you about Rehoboth right here. 10,000 being
that's
deferred
what I was comparing
for 2 years.
To.
Yes. And I only found out about Rehoboth at the start of this year. And I knew about that 75,000 for 2 years.
Jeez.
Windhoek is a nightmare. I won't even mention Windhoek.
No, don't.
I won't even dare mentioning Windhoek because you'll probably have to buy a car with that money. Now I'm going to ask you, Hamoud.
And looking at the financing.
That's what I'm going to ask you now again, Hamoud. Let's position the resource. We don't need the Chinese to come and reinvent the sand grain for us. We've got our sand. We know what our sand looks like. Some of us eat it, not me. But we know what it looks like. What can we actually take away in terms of property development, meeting housing demand, the policy direction from 2016? The one about shaking the tree. Mm-hmm. But if I now explain, okay, let's firstly take this caller coming through and then let's have a listen to what they have to share. Eagle FM, good day.
Yes, good afternoon.
Angabona, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
I'm all right. What do you want to share, Angabona?
You know, I want to share the... I want to share what you were talking about during the... There was a time when you were talking about cassava. I know the person who was the guest there.
Yeah. You can talk, Angabona.
Cassava, the import, how Nigeria is importing cassava. I mean, exporting cassava and all these other countries. So I was expecting that discussion to send our sermon. Oh. That's what I wanted to talk about with you guys.
Angabona, you can still add. Don't worry. Because we're talking basically about the president's state visit to China, and it has to take a whole bunch of dimensions into consideration.
Yeah, you see. So thank you very much for that opportunity. Yes. You see, man, with all the bilateral agreements and all this technical agreement or whatever, we are honestly speaking expecting some of those people, some of those idea or lesson that you people have learned. We are even talking about the Chinese towns, the towns and all these things.
Yeah.
What we think we can do here in Namibia to really implement some of those lessons that we are learning. What is so difficult for really us to say, because we used to produce cassava here, almost every house in the rural area there, most of the house, those years, they have got cassava, they have got, this sweet potato,
Yeah.
They have got all these things that you use, my friend.
Yeah.
But now, I don't know why that spirit has disappeared too. That kind of, because almost every child in the house, we used to have cassavas to even sell, but you know, it's because of the small scale, you know, in the house, all kind of setting. Now, are you saying that we cannot to have some good foundation of those cassavas, like even in Angola here.
Yeah.
We have a lot of them. So it's just unfortunate that I did not finish your discussion because Emuta came. When Emuta came, and then you deviated in the laws, policies, and many other issues.
Yeah.
Many other issues. So that's why I did not, I've been calling, so I'm... Luckily, you pick up my phone.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was basically trying to get into that area. So where we can, at least like things like cassava.
Yeah.
Cassava, we can do a lot of things. I'll call you. Cassava, we can do a lot of things. But why are you saying that we are not doing those, some of this work? Why are we not doing some of this work? Is it because the agriculture, when they talk about this smart what? Smart
irrigation.
Climate irrigation, this one. So they are also coming from the lesson that people have learned. So Elmwood, I mean Dwight, so he's always telling us the story here about the Chinese lessons and all this, how the towns that we're talking about. So why are we not perhaps using those methods to produce food that we should do, to produce?
I think it's also a mixture of what the guest, Mr. Branch, highlighted here earlier about it's not just about growing, because we need more people to create more activity around after the thing is grown, after the thing is cultivated, and after the thing has been harvested. We need to factor in things there. For example, Angabona, let's say there's five of you that grow cassava, Angabona, and I'm number six, and I don't want to grow cassava, but I am also right next to you with my own little plantation of something. So
you can package your cassava. You can package your cassava or grind them and then you put them into the thing. And before you ship, if you are talking about value addition now, creating a lot of activity around that.
True, Angabona, but we will still, one of us will still have to do the transportation. One of us will still have to build a cold storage to store the thing in. Mm-hmm. One of us will still have to employ people to drive the truck and to work at the cold storage. And the other one of us, we will have to also try and pitch in terms of potentially making a watermelon or a cassava juice making machine and a factory. So
what is happening? What is preventing us? Is it because of the population that you are too small?
No. I think it's our perspective, Angabona. I think it's our perspective. Our perspective is I've always thought about why must I go and farm now at my age now? And then you realize, okay, it's probably something outside of what you studied. It's probably something else that you did. But then the concern is also, okay, what are the trade-offs? What are the pros? What are the cons? Must I now go live with the birds and the bees in the bush and then look at each other and imagine myself, you know, having the conveniences that I used to have in Windhoek? Or do I take that risk and go and live with the birds and the bees in the bush and then technically go and do the activity?
Allow the poverty to prevail and all these other things. There's nothing that we can do again. So we must just leave it like that.
Basically, yeah. It's all up to us. It's all up to us, Angabona. It's choices. It's choices we make.
Now, okay. If that is the case, then let's accept our situation. So if there's nobody to be brave.
Okay, Angabona. We will accept our situation.
What can we do?
Yeah, what can we do? What can we do? But yeah.
And then what can you do now? Complain because sometimes what I think is that sometimes we are reading and we are hearing, oh, this one is there's some money there, there's some training activity, there's what, those who want to get in the agri processing activities and all these other things. Then if that is the case, when we can not seem to see the way out,
yeah,
then who's going to be blamed?
Yeah.
We blame the government, we blame the Angabona, we blame the Helmut, or who?
Yeah, I'm very glad, Angabona, no one is blaming Dwight, you know. I didn't do anything. They can blame you and Helmut, you know. I don't know what you guys did.
Nah. I'm too broke to be blamed.
Well, Angabona, let me highlight this, but or summarize this particular point. The moment we start talking about sectors and certain sector developments and scenarios, there is nothing wrong. There is to avoid the discussion of blame game and all that. There is nothing wrong specifically with highlighting the deficiencies. Our concern probably is that we are trying to do too many things at one stage.
Yeah.
All at once. Yeah. We're trying to do so many things at once. Angabona, let me highlight this to you. I am someone that is unfortunately academically inclined. I'm not a major proponent of like the overly technical and skills based stuff because I've been exposed too much to academics. But you know what, Angabona, we need? We really need scientists. We really need researchers. We really need, Angabona, do you know that we don't technically have archaeologists and historians in Namibia? We need these people.
You mean all this information that you people have been teaching us, Data Tekaurumas,
Basically, yes, yes. And those people need to be certified. They need to go for some sort of training, have some sort of a certification from the industry, stuff like that. Because Angabona, every time, because since I'm a history buff and I like watching history, I watch documentaries on YouTube and then I hear of a historian, of a archaeologist. And then I realized, how did this person get there? Because this person basically is like a glorified journalist, but not a journalist that goes and writes for a newspaper, but a journalist that just writes the findings of, I found this leaf, or I found this ancient village, or I found this cave. That's it.
Discovering.
That's it. That's all they do. But these people are paid.
We have a long way to go, but is it helmet now?
Yeah.
Is it the policy issues, or is it the issue that... where do we begin?
I think it's one. I mean, I think it's just what Dwight pointed out, that we have a lot of things to tackle all at once, and it's going to take a while. And it's not like we can leave one behind so that we can focus on one. I mean, we can prioritize, but I don't think we can toss one aside and just focus on one of them. Now, take education for example. We need education to industrialize, literally, because we need to produce a lot of our local based information, because in terms of research and development, because that's where because if we have to adopt foreign which we can, if we can adopt foreign ideas that have been researched and refined, we'll have to pay for it. Look, okay, it's going to take a while.
Yes, I thank you very much, guys, for educating me in a lot of these issues. But in the conclusion now, that book that is launched by Dr. Mind is Matter. No, Mind is Mighty. Mind is Mighty. And Dr. Wu, one of my best friends, Dr. Mwangwa. That name that is sound like that, very long and difficult for me to pronounce.
Why does that sound like a diesel engine starting in the morning of a frozen winter?
Are you reading, Angabona?
We should know, because it's in the Kwangali or one of the languages in Kavango.
Mind over Might. Is that the book's name?
So that book, when I was listening to the...
Mr. Mwangwango, that sounds like a pickup truck in a gravel road. But...
My apology for mispronouncing that name. You may have
that. Oh, well, you tried.
I tried. So, thank you very much, guys. Enjoy your night.
Not a problem, Angabona.
Good.
The core concern, guys, just for you to look at. If you're also going to ask the question in terms of, so why were we in China? What is Dwight and Helmut highlighting? Because why are we picking on so many things that are so broad, whereas, you know, it seems like the president was just there for industrial development and further industrial collaboration between Namibia and China. It's because we have so many issues to sort out. We have.
Just one question on cassava. It turns out one of the cassava has both consumption and industrial use, and one of its industrial use is to make biodegradable plastic bags.
Yeah.
So you have a very environmentally friendly type of carriage bags that you can produce from this product that is very resistant to a lot of environmental challenges that a lot of crops are struggling with today. Why not just the world just farm it on a commercial level? Because here are a list of countries that have seemed to have already made headways in that market. China is on that list. India is on that list. Vietnam, Thailand, and Nigeria, no surprises there, and Brazil.
you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250ml jars of Vaseline for only $25 Namibian. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99 Namibian. Get 2kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99 Namibian. Get 750ml Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99 Namibian. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99 Namibian. You Save. Where else?
Coming back, guys, Helmut, you were still citing the
industrial use of cassava. Yeah. Now, for consumption, it's also consumable for human beings, and it can also be used for animal feed.
But let me ask you this question with cassava, Helmut,
yeah.
Before you continue there.
Yeah.
Namibia is trying to reach its oil FID.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that.
And we all know that the money spinner is the petrochemicals.
Yeah.
Not the selling of fuel.
Yeah.
The petrochemicals. Why would you be bothering your time with cassava?
Okay, but where are those petrochemicals going to be? Because you get those petrochemicals from refining.
Yeah.
Last time I checked,
And you need a refinery right next to the petrochemicals.
We don't have a refinery. That's the point.
Yeah.
That means... if we had a refinery and we refined the oil, that means you'll get a lot of products from that crude oil. I mean, it's called crude for a reason because it's just it's a hodgepodge of a lot of different chemicals.
Mm.
So that means you'll get your tar from there for your roads and cigarettes. And you'll get your kerosene from there. You'll get your jet fuel from there.
Yeah.
Shout out to Namibia. And you'll get a lot of products from.
So, I was confused. What?
Yeah.
Why are you shutting up to a company that doesn't exist anymore?
Well, it's their loss, most.
Yeah.
Fertilizer and a lot of products come out of crude oil. But you first have to refine. You need the refining capacity and the processing capacity to not just to refine into these different sub products that are coming out of this overall crude oil product.
Yeah.
But you also need you need a refining. You need a refining. After refining into different products, you need the processing capabilities, not just in terms of infrastructure, but also skills to process all these things into all these different products, from bitumen for your road or tar for your road to simple Vaseline and all these things. Now, if we don't have a refinery, that means wherever this crude oil is going to be refined.
Tar. It's not just the bitumen, it's the tar as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Bitumen is a kind of a tar.
It's basically the final gooey that is left at the bottom of the fractional distillation column.
Yeah.
My point is we don't have a refinery. I don't see how we are going to have access to all these things because if it's being refined, take for example, somewhere in the UAE or Saudi Arabia or China or...
That MOU that was signed with Zambia.
If it's refined there, it's gonna be there.
Namibia, we have issues. I still believe, Helmut, we need a robust investment in textile manufacturing.
Textile would be a good place to, and I think we have started if you look at it. But the thing is, I don't think we started with the right oomph. Because if you look at Ondango Tannery, that falls, you can produce a lot of textile products out of that.
Mm.
High end, if you're talking about leather. And, the one in Kurenkuru or Dinapama, somewhere in the Kavango West region, the side of Divundu.
Mm.
Well, that's where I home. I have to visit home. Anyway.
I thought Divundu is Kavango East.
Kavango East, yeah, you're right. Kavango East.
You forgot your own hometown.
You have no idea.
Hey.
Lack of opportunities will do that to you.
And then everybody in Divundu is seeing you having access to all the opportunities in Windhoek.
All the opportunities might be behind. Look at it.
This is what happens, guys. This is what happens. This is what happens. When we come to Windhoek.
The point is,
other people are looking to us for opportunities. We are looking at other people are staying away. Just stay away. There are no opportunities.
Yeah, there's one guy. There's one guy I went to school with who liked to, you know, to make jokes. Some of us have been in Windhoek long enough that we may as well just change our, you know, date of birth on the ID and birth certificate, no, place of birth on the ID and birth certificate to, you know, to Windhoek, Commerce Region.
Mm.
Which is weird because, you know, considering your parents have never crossed Rundu. And everyone will be like, how the heck were you born in Windhoek? Your parents have never been to Grootfontein. And the people I went to school.
That's a savage joke.
I know, right?
Never having crossed the veterinary cordon line.
Yeah.
Even.
But their son was born on the other side of the cordon fence.
We Namibians love jokes. We love jokes.
Yeah. So I think all the products that goes beyond the refined transport or fuel, or more like a agriculture type of fuel, and even lubricants comes out of that.
Mm.
Yeah, your engine oil and everything comes out of that. But for you to get all these products in their separate formats, you need to refine first. We don't have that capacity. I don't see how we're going to pull that off.
Yeah, me neither. Even though the baseline survey report says we have met most of the things in terms of local content,
mm-hmm.
meaning the businesses that are here,
mm-hmm.
there are certain things that we are lacking in, which is definitely a refinery
mm-hmm.
and definitely a petrochemicals
yeah.
aspect. But while we are citing that, and while you cited cassava, on the other side of life, in the green energy transition discussion,
yeah.
remember we spoke about the circular economy developments?
Yeah.
And the power to X developments yeah. at the what's that power station outside Tsumeb?
Is it the High Iron?
No. The one that they're going to use the encroaching bush as a fuel for. The biomass power station. Yeah. Which potentially can also basically make all those petrochemical substitute products.
I think...
I like reality.
Yeah, same here.
It likes slapping you sometimes away. It just goes like, wake up, son.
Look, I think you know you made a very good point earlier that we have our hands full because we have to tackle a lot of economic activities. So it's sort of like we're rebuilding them, we are building them, most of them from the ground up.
Yeah,
and we are doing this in a world that has technology that is changing by the minute. And we not only do we have to keep up with the technology that we are not participating at the forefront in terms of its research and development for us to see which direction it's gonna be headed the following week or the following month or the year, but we are trailing behind with the technology. That means the technology is changing really fast, and that's where I look. That's where I like the Americans now. Because if you look at the projects that they have, even though it has a very shady history, like DARPA, for example,
yeah,
DARPA is this division of the American government research project, basically, where they have technology that is 5-10 years into the future of what is available, especially in the consumer sphere. I mean, the internet was once there before it got to the regular individual for you and I to use today. Since its inception, technology is growing faster because a lot of different countries are investing in research and development. They are facing multiple breakthroughs, not just in pharmacy, but also in equipment, physical equipment that's used in hospitals, in agriculture, in schools, or just the consumer technology, like your cell phones or your smartphones and televisions.
Yeah.
Now, we're yet to get there. We're at that point where we don't even produce a single component on a smartphone. So now you know how much catching up we have to do. We have the raw products that makes up, when refined and processed, that makes up pretty much every device we use.
Yeah.
Yeah. The raw material can be traced to where we are, but where it's refined and processed and made into a finished product, you know, like your chip and your, you know, basically your electronic components, just like your diodes, for example.
Last night I had to hear about certain metals that are apparently too light to even to be considered metals, but they are somewhere behind another metal that's on the periodic table, which is the critical rare earth minerals discussion. Yeah. And I was like, okay, so we sit with all these things that can be any rock that you see out there in the bush, Herbert. Any rock.
Yeah.
It can be any rock. And you realize, huh. So why didn't we just bring the other value addition companies closer to the source where the thing is mined? You know, why don't we have, let's for example, if it's lithium, the lithium processing plant just right outside the mine, or close to Uis, or in Uis, because the mine is outside Uis. And then why don't we also open up the, you know, a specific kind of a different kind of a secondary factory that then makes some sort of a component part that latches onto this lithium, or the lithium features into it. I mean, if Europe's legislation, EU's legislation, the legislation on cell phones has to go through about the reusable cell phones, the reusable batteries,
removable batteries,
the removable batteries, yeah. If that legislation goes through, Hamoud, that means there's going to be a huge appetite for lithium batteries.
Yeah. There's still one already in the electrical, in EVs.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a very high demand.
The dimension that speaks from this is one based on, okay, what's the future trends? Who has set what laws and policies in place? And every time I am surprised by what the EU gets right, because the EU makes a law. The EU doesn't come with a policy.
Mm.
The EU doesn't come say, tell you, Helmut, please invest here. The EU says, listen, we realize we are taking a moral position in terms of protecting EU customers and consumers. Mm. This is what you've got to do from now.
These are the standards. You're going to have to meet them or not. You're not going to participate in our
We've
economy.
Had public consultations in our countries. We've asked you for written submissions to defend your position as a company.
Mm.
Let's hear. But when you come to a country like Namibia that is still trying to find its feet and stuff like that, we don't see the same level of impetus.
No, I think the obvious reason behind that I can think of at the top of my head would be the economic size. The EU has the economic size to basically dictate those terms on a lot of multinational companies. Yeah,
I mean,
and they wouldn't want to lose a market. I mean, they consume, they buy a lot of our meat. We wouldn't want to lose the EU as a market for our beef.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think there's any reasonable company that want to lose a market as lucrative as the EU market.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at countries like Namibia, for example, the economic size is tiny on a global stage, to say the least. Yeah. Take for example, if you were to give an ultimatum to a company that it's either you follow these instructions or you're not going to participate in our market. A lot of them, especially if the only thing they have to consider is economic size, a lot of them would most likely just take their bags and leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and even though we are right now giving, you know, Starlink a serious headache,
I still don't want that thing here. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. Because to me, it just looks like clutter.
A lot of it.
But I was surprised by the article that I wrote in the event that I went to.
Yeah.
The Namibian and South African partners.
Yeah.
I was surprised by them.
Yeah.
Because no one told us that this thing was...
Was already
in... It was in the pipelines already.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, look.
But before we continue, Hamoud, we've got an ad break.
Commercial break. And sign off.
efiloshisho olotali kutungupo. Oma wa o tomono okujako NHP. Genge wa longifa elongifo lilipedulo wa wo uhaku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku nefiku. Mefiloshisho lo uhaku oe. Owa woshimali wa oshosha kupako. Washika wedelwa komto alando lako. Kashi, koma punglo e na shano unjolo welewe. Otodulo okulongifa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko, opo unamiti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti lapo oimali wa ishona. Oyo hodulo okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene, oma yakulo olu hapu, hakala ina kwa telwa, mouwa we kwa folo elo unamiti, ile oto julu no kuli, okupitifapo e mwe didonumba, tokala ino futa e akulo lo elo unamiti. Kowyalele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fano ododina okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Coming back, dear listeners, there from the quick break. And Hamut, you were still about to say something before we sign off?
The genius part? Oh, okay.
The listeners didn't hear that part.
Thank you, Evans. Just to wrap it up, because we are just 7 o'clock on the dot. I think we have a lot of hoops to jump through, and it's Mr. Branch pointed out that it's a steep learning curve where we are, and we're gonna get there, but it's gonna take a while, and we're gonna have to think and do all at once.
And it's gonna be purposeful planning.
Yeah, it will have to be purposeful planning, or otherwise it's going to take even longer.
Yeah, it'll have to be purposeful. My concern is obviously just other dimensions that form part of the bigger Namibian agenda and the bigger Namibian dream. I don't want to use the word dream, because sometimes that word might entail lawlessness, and I'm not there for that particular term of dream. We still have to define what the Namibian dream also means. But on that note, dear listeners, this does bring us up to the end for this evening's The Home Run. Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
Yep.
Here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.